Show with Edison Bunkus.
This one's good!
On Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Good morning, good people. It's Good Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm J.D. Bunkus. Technical difficulties is never the way that you want to start a morning. That's what's happening here. I'm a little frazzled. A little shook up. Trying to figure it out. Trying to make my way in the big city. I love working from home. Genuinely. Fold up all the offices. I'm a home work guy. But, yeah, the tech stuff. I'm not exactly Mr. Reliable when it comes to this stuff. It's not like, oh, you know, let JD figure it out. No. I'm not that guy. That is not me. I love my producer, Mark Boffo, on the show. We're trying to, he's like, did you try turning it on and off again? I'm like, yeah, Boffo, that's, you know, I'm on that. We're both on that. I've seen that South Park where they unplug the internet. That's the move. That's the only move that I'll ever have. You got to love when, yeah, dudes are standing around trying to fix something tech. Do you try unplugging it? Plugging it back in? You try to turn it off? Turn it back on again? Did you close the app? Reopen the app? We need to get to a place in society where we stop offering that. To anyone, no offense. Yeah, I think that turning it on, turning it off again, there's no age left. Even if you say that to your grandparents, like, that's offensive. That's ageism. All right. Blue Jays, they lose. What a surprise. What a surprise that they lost with a bullpen day and a lineup where the bottom three were, you know, completely irrelevant. Why are they playing Reese McGuire at this point? If you're going to rest guys, it just felt like that was a punt day. It really did. It felt like they were punting and they were saying, we don't have the starter. We're hoping to get lucky here. But why are you resting outfielders? Like, is Grichuk tired? Dickerson can't go? It's odd. Your catchers are gassed? Danny Jansen didn't play half the season. Very strange. And then, of course, we end up with Beanball. And I was talking about it with Boff before the show. I love it, right? Like, I'm on record with this already, that I don't think that was that big of a deal, the stealing of the lineup card. Fine. The Blue Jays, it was a big deal to them. I saw somebody with that take. Ultimately, they are correct. If the Blue Jays thought it was a huge deal, who am I to say that it isn't? I'm just not that upset with Kiermaier about it. From an outsider's perspective, saying, hey, you dropped the card and another opponent picked it up. He walked it to the dugout. Obviously, he was going to do that. I actually kind of feel the other way, though, too, where, hey, Kiermaier, you grab it. You walk it to the dugout. We live in an era where not only did we have cameras everywhere that we're going to pick it up, but it wasn't as though Kirk wasn't going to notice it missing and put two and two together just about immediately. So you grabbed it. No harm, no foul, but you also have to be the one that wears it. Now, these two teams really hate each other. And maybe it's just because of where we're at with sports, where there's a lot of friends in the industry. Not a ton of hate. Competitiveness remains high. I don't know if this ever actually bleeds into the competitive element of a game, but guys train together in off seasons. NBA, it's always everyone played AAU together. That's why the Giannis thing was so special, and that's why him taking shots at the podium at the Brooklyn Nets was so great after he won the championship, saying that he essentially did it the right way, the hard way. Loved that. this Blue Jays team is super likable, and everybody loves Vladdy, and the regular season is, oh, look at Vladdy. He's a great guy. He's a great human being. We all love Vladdy. He's our guy. But I like hating other teams. I like hating other players, sports hating. And so having the Rays looming there and having the potential of getting into a playoff series with them, God, wouldn't that be sweet? And actually having some emotional equity against the Rays beyond, well, they're the team that doesn't pay anybody, so we're supposed to hate them, which I do, but also I don't. I still root for the Rays when they face the Yankees. I still root for the Rays when they face the Red Sox. Now, maybe since they're the juggernaut of the division, they're the clear class of the division, there's a little bit of hate. I also don't really love the he could have killed him argument, as I've said before, because nobody's dying from beanballs. It's like, yes, you could die from that. Okay, you could die from a lot of different things. And so far, control pitchers whipping it into guys' backs has not resulted in a big spike in deaths. Dan Schulman, the man, Blue Jays play-by-play, joins me now. What's up, man?
How are you? I had a feeling this would be the first topic of the day.
You did? Yeah. I think that my bosses would be pretty pissed if it wasn't, you know? If I started today, like, you know, Julian Merriweather as an opener. What are our thoughts on that? Do we like it? Do we think that this could be a playoff situation? Yeah. It's all about the beaning. Bean ball. So some people – so I got a mea culpa. I watched the game without sound yesterday. I was at a establishment. They played music instead of you, which I thought was offensive. I asked for it. They said no. That's okay. I don't know what your thoughts were on it.
Give me the name of that establishment, so I never go there. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll never go. I told them that actually when I was there. I was like, you know, I'm never coming back here. And they're like, we're so sorry. We'll change our policies. Please. You drink so many Bud Lights. I don't know what the vibe was in the moment. I don't know how everybody was feeling about it. I know that when you and Buck discussed the lineup card the day before, he kind of dismissed it as no big deal. I sort of felt like it was no big deal. It seemed like a pretty big-ass deal to the Toronto Blue Jays, though. Like, it lingered.
Yeah, so the day before, I didn't think anything was going to happen. As you said, when we talked about the lineups, I mean, you got a game to go win. Now, 7-1 in the eighth inning, the next day, obviously, it's a little bit of a different situation. And there are people I respect a lot who have come down totally on opposite sides of this issue, and that's fair. You know that's okay. It doesn't make one person smarter than the other, or the other person an idiot, or something like that. I will tell you, I generally am not a fan of throwing baseballs at people to seek out justice. I don't think Charlie had anything to do with this. I might be wrong, but I don't think Charlie had anything to do with this. So in the moment, I don't remember exactly what I said, but, I know I said something to the effect of, you know, Baraki's going to get suspended here, and now Pearson's got to come in and pitch an inning. And if those two things mean nothing, you know, then fine. You know, if those two things don't bother you. I do think you're introducing risk into the issue when you hit somebody, either through a fight or somebody hitting one of your guys back later or next year. But if this is something the Blue Jays felt they had to do to galvanize the team, to exact revenge, then fine. To be honest with you, I'm like, tonight there's a game against the Twins and it's over. Like, let's go. Got to win a game. So, but in the moment, I understand why it's the biggest story around. I'm glad Manoah didn't do it. And I hope the Blue Jays understood a suspension is likely forthcoming because of this, because it happened earlier this year. And I know I talked about that even before Baraki hit him. Remember, Manoah gave up two home runs in a row, I think, and then hit the next guy. No warnings had been given. He got tossed out of the game, and he got suspended. Like, Baraki's going to get suspended. And, you know, Baraki's not Meza or Romano, and that was part of this, too. I don't think Romano does this. But then, again, Romano's not in the game in a 7-1 score. So, but if they understood, hey, now you got to suspend a guy, and now a guy's going to get suspended, now you got to pitch Pearson, which means you won't have him tonight, then fine. They knew what they were getting themselves into.
Well, I think Ryan Baraki knew what he was getting himself into, too, because this team is so young, you forget. I think this is fact. I think Ryan Baraki is the longest tenured Blue Jay.
Wow, that's something. I will tell you this. he is, it's hard to call anybody who's 26 old school, but he's old school.
I know.
He is. And I like Ryan Borucki a lot. Like, I think he's great guy. In the moment, I didn't. So the other thing was, Arash was in the middle of a report when Borucki threw at Kiermaier. So it wasn't like it happened before, you know, and all of a sudden it was like, oh, the inning started and Borucki just hit him and here we go. So, but I saw a heat map on Twitter, which had like a Statcast overlay of every pitch Ryan Borucki has thrown in his major league career, every single pitch. Mm-hmm. And it's not very hard to figure out which is the one that that happened last night. So, no, the ball didn't just get away from him. But, no, he's not going to admit that it did. Like, who's the last guy who did that? But I guess in hindsight, I wish I had said during the commercial break, hey, guys, let's have an eye here, like something. But I wasn't thinking of that in that moment. So, but, yeah, he is kind of an old school guy for a pretty young guy. And I think he knew exactly what he was doing.
Well, if you say agua under the bridge and then you rip one into somebody's back, I think it's a little unexpected, right? I thought similar thing where it didn't happen in that game, and nor should it have, because you could not have Manoah do it. That was the most obvious thing on the planet was, hey, maybe I don't think he's your most important pitcher. That's obviously still got to be Robbie Ray. But I really believe that the two of them are so unbelievably close right now. I've said this over and over and over again, but I think that the gap between Manoah and Ray's importance is smaller than the gap between Berríos and Manoah's, which is incredible for him as a rookie. But you couldn't have him. He was going to face a lengthy suspension. It probably would have taken him out of the stretch run. And yeah, you couldn't have him miss a single start. The next game, I wasn't really thinking about it, and I was kind of similar with you, where the game was going on. It was a long ball game. All I'm thinking about is what the Yankee score is at that point, what the Red Sox score is at that point, about their series in the upcoming games, and Brucky does it. And yeah, I guess I'm not the biggest fan of beanball just in general. Like, I'm not like, hey, do it all the time, do it all the time. It's to me, it's the same thing with fighting and hockey, where when it feels staged and lame, it feels so lame. But when it feels like there's a real purpose for it, then go ahead and do it. I lean more on the side of that couldn't have mattered that much, right? The card. Enough of the explanations were told me. And I also wasn't mad at Kiermaier, because I just think that's what competitive people do, is that you drop that thing right in front of somebody. I didn't think that you're ever going to be in a spot where someone leaves it there, doesn't pick it up, doesn't bring it back to the dugout, doesn't take a look at it. That's on the Blue Jays for letting that slip out. And that's just, again, my opinion. But for Borucki, as the guy who's the longest tenured Blue Jay, to go out there, know that he's going to be out of a game after kind of an up and down season where the team is obviously kind of pissed off about it. They're about to head into one of their most important stretches of the year. They hate the Rays. They put one in his back. I kind of love it. I'm all for it. That didn't feel manufactured to me. That felt kind of, righteous kill.
Yeah, so I think Ryan Borucki knew it was coming. I think Danny Jansen probably knew it was coming. I don't think Charlie was in on this. So you mentioned agua under the bridge. I don't think Charlie
under
says
the bridge.
Agua
gonna
under
say
the
that
bridge.
For the rest of my life.
Right, yeah.
As a term, that I'm lying, though. If I say it's agua under the bridge, you better know that it's like, it's not under the bridge.
Right, but
it's
I don't
not.
Think Charlie was lying. That's my point. I think Charlie meant it when he said it. I don't think Charlie was in on this. And at the end of the day, who knows, and we're never going to find out, and what does it really matter? But I just think this was kind of Ryan Borucki deciding he was going to do this. Maybe Pete was in on it or not. I don't know. I don't want to speculate because I don't know anything about that. But I feel pretty strongly about Charlie, that when Charlie said agua under the bridge, he meant agua under the bridge. And, again, they had to know what this would lead to, what it is likely to lead to, and if they're fine with it, they're fine with it. So I went back and looked at this. So the second game, the Manoah game, that game was never out of hand. That was 1-0, 1-1, 2-1, 2-2, 3-2-4. Like, the game was never out of hand. You can't do it in a close game. It only happens in a game where somebody's up or down by 6 or 8 or 10 or whatever the case may be. So it wasn't going to happen the night before, and thank goodness, because you don't want Manoah to get mixed up in any of that. So, and also in yesterday's game, it was 7-1 in the fifth inning when Anthony Castro came into the game, and Kiermaier led off an inning, the first full inning that Castro pitched. Now, so one of two things happened there. Either somebody said, it's only the fifth inning, we can still come back, don't do it, or Castro wasn't the guy to do it. And that's why I think Baruchy did it on his own. Baruchy was the guy to do it. It's easier for a lefty to say, I missed arm side, I like to pitch in, it ran in on him. Like, cause you know, optically, it's an easier quasi-sell to with Baruchy than it is with Castro. Plus, Castro's been in the majors for, like, you know, a few days here and a couple of weeks there. So the situation for it to happen, all the elements were there when Baruchy came in. But they're going to have to play a man short for a bit, and they won't have Pearson tonight. And hopefully, again, not to overstate those two things, Baruchy is a lower leverage guy in the bullpen right now, but you do have to play a man short. But, hopefully that won't hurt him at any point in the next few days.
So let's move on to, I guess, some things that matter. This will suck up a lot of oxygen today. It's definitely fun to talk about. I care about it. But when we're projecting forward, there were a couple things that, you know, we just discussed, and I think that lead into the next thing. One is you have a bullpen day because you don't have Ryu. And my position has been that if you're shutting down Ryu now and the way that he's gone, you just can't have him in the Yankees series. And that's when he's eligible to come back. And if you're not pitching him in the Yankee series, how are you bringing him to a playoff roster? Like, he's going to go out against the Orioles and show you something that now elevates his level of trust. Do you think that Ryu is done for the year? And if he is, I've compared him to Mark Burley. The difference is Mark Burley was a couple of years older, but also on his way out when he was left off the playoff roster. And you got two more years left with Ryu where he's making $20 million a season. I don't really know much about Ryu. I don't know much about, like, his pride level. I'm guessing it's extremely high because he's a professional athlete and he's a, you know, Cy Young runner up the season before. But where are you at just with this thing in general?
So let's start with 22 and 23. So it's funny, over his last eight starts, four of them have been statistically awful. It hit really hard. One of the others was six scoreless innings against the Yankees with the best velocity that he had all year. So that's just three starts ago. And one of the others, I think against the Orioles, but I can't remember, he took a no-hitter into the sixth inning. Like, he's had some ups. He's just had some ugly downs, too. So in terms of 22 and 23, I don't even think you go there now. You don't even think about that now. That you can't do anything about it now. You can't plan for it now. That's an off-season thing. So I get that that's the kind of thing that can generate a lot of conversation, and oh no, what do they do? But to me, that's a November conversation. In terms of Tuesday, the good news is they got an off day Monday. Today is Thursday. Steven Matz is starting tonight. Steven Matz can start the game Tuesday. They just skip the spot. That's like 100%. That's what I do. I just skip the spot. So I'm trying to remember what order everybody else would be in. So I think it would be, I think it's Berríos, Ray, Manoah, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So Matz, Berríos, Ray, Manoah, off day. Matz, Berríos, Ray, Manoah. That gets you to the last, literally to the last day of the regular season. So on the last day of the regular season, if the game mattered, you would have to make a choice. At that point, you could do Berríos on short rest, on 3 days rest. I don't think Ryu figures in if he hasn't pitched at any point in there. You could have some crazy bullpen day where Robbie Ray's coming in for two innings, but it's the last day of the regular season. There's a chance it won't matter. So I don't know what they're thinking, but if it were me, unless there's something I'm missing here, I just skip the spot, and I have Matz go on Tuesday in the first game of the Yankee series.
You mentioned that you're not really thinking about 22, 23. I was agreeing with you. It was just, you know, into the void, to no one. No one heard it but me. Just about how I'm living very much in the moment with this team. The only thing I can't help but feel like is how there is a resonance with your clubhouse and what this does to Ryu and whether there is a bit of a fracturing relationship, how he absorbs those things. I do think that's in the moment stuff, right? I do think that that can be a bit of a distraction. I don't think he is that guy, but I think I'm putting a lot of, well, he's a quiet leader on him when I don't really know much about him because I've really never heard him say anything.
Yeah, that's fair. But I don't, and I don't want to be cold-hearted here, but I don't think you can worry about that right now. You've got to win a game tonight. You've got to win a game Tuesday. You got to win a game next Sunday, maybe. So I hear what you're saying. I don't know if his neck really hurt or not, and I don't know if it's really better now or not. I suspect this was a bit of a reset, like let's skip him, let's give him a rest. He's typically better when he's rested, that sort of thing. And who knows if he fought it or if he's all on board or somewhere in between. But in this moment, I don't think you can worry about it. I do think if he is physically able to pitch, that you need to get him in a place where he might pitch just in case you need him.
Yeah.
Because what happens if somebody takes a comebacker off the knee? Well, what happens if Matz takes a comebacker off the knee tonight? You might need Ryu. Like, you might turn to a guy. You've always got to, in baseball, you've always got to play the what-if game. And it's unfortunate, but you've got to kind of go worst-case scenario and make sure you're covered. So I think you've got to prepare as if he is going to pitch. I just don't know when that next opportunity comes. And I think you've got to worry about winning the game in front of you more than you've got to worry about his feelings at this point, unfortunately. I don't know. I know you dropped out. So did you hear my whole what I would do Tuesday thing, or did you miss all
of
that?
Yeah, no, I heard everything you said. It was my end that wasn't allowing me to speak. And
got it.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I just think it yeah, I think that was the plan all along. I don't buy the neck thing. I kind of hope they've sold him on the neck thing. I joked, but I said I'd be sending the trainer in to Ryu and saying, "Man, your neck is hanging on by a thread. You're not in pain. This is incredible. You're so strong." But yeah, I think it's that situation. Shai was on the broadcast the day after his start, mentioning they were discussing skipping his start, and I think that from an optic standpoint, it's a good thing to say, hey, this guy is going on the IL. Hey, it's a neck thing, you know, neck, back, all that kind of stuff is easy to play around the edges with, right, for throwing guys on the IL. And I just think it's one of those. And I wish him the best. I'm still a huge Ryu fan. I still do the contract 100 times out of 100, even though this is now going to be kind of two straight postseasons where he's not himself, which is kind of not comforting, but either way, the rotation is so good that it's really hard to be overly concerned about it, because it's like, if you were going to lose someone anywhere, that's what you were going to do, which again is shocking considering you and I both agreed. And I remember one of your earliest takes, and it was right. I'm not saying this to take shame you. I'm saying this because it's like the perspective of it was us in agreeance that there might not be a pitcher that was more important to an organization than Ryu was to the Jays at the beginning of the season, right? That's what we all had.
Yeah, I remember saying that. And at that point, Robbie Ray was, he did pretty well last year, and let's see what he does here. Manoah's in the minors. Berríos is a twin, and Matz is coming off a 9.64 ERA. Yep. Roark is in the rotation. Plan is Zoik and Wagispack. Like, look at how the world has changed in the in the last 6 months. But I think they can figure this out. I think they can go Matz, Berríos, Raymond, all whatever the order is, off day, do it again. And then if you get to the last day of the regular season, how many times have how many teams, you know, patched it together? Look at what imagine if the Rays had a must-win game on the last Sunday of the regular season. So what they would do, like, you got to do what you got to do on the last day of the regular season. But if things go well, you might get to the last Sunday and already be in. And then, you know what? Hyunjin Ryu pitches because you might need him in a playoff series down the road. That's how this works. But on the mound, I don't think they have an issue for the next 9 days. If they, and again, I'm sure there are 100 other ways to do it, and I'm sure I'm wrong, but you got that off day Monday, use it to your advantage, roll the other four guys.
Man, you just painted a scenario that now I sneaky want just from narratives and like baseball magic standpoint, which is that the Jays need that Orioles game, the final one of the season, to clinch the wild card, right?
So they got to turn the ball to Ryu. That game to get in, and what if that game only gets them into a tiebreaker, which they need in order to get in? You know, like, how much stress do you really want in your life at this point?
Well, Les, I'm not going to give a take on this yet because I don't want it to come back and bite me in the ass. I'm just not ready for the stress. I'm already so stressed watching these games. There was almost something comforting last night having the game be 7-1 so early and just kind of kick back and accept that it was a loss rather than the roller coaster of emotions that have been the last month. And knowing
wait,
that I'm strapping
till Tuesday,
in for.
Man. Wait till
I know.
Tuesday.
That's
Tuesday's
it.
Tuesday's going to be 10 times more stressful.
I'm going to go to the park for, I hope, all of those games. By the way, good news that they're upping. I haven't seen the number yet, but apparently the Blue Jays are selling more tickets for the final homestand. Yeah, it says Toronto Blue Jays release more tickets ahead of possible Rogers Center capacity boost. So I think it's still in the works. I don't think that this is a done deal, but that they're selling the tickets, which you have to believe anyways, is a good thing, which is it's a good thing. That is a good thing. Again, these crowds are fully vaccinated. You got to show a vaccine to get in. The stadium's open. I've never once felt like I was unsafe at the Rogers Center. I know maybe my risk tolerance is different than other people, but there's still going to be socially distanced sections. I think that the Jays have actually done a really, really, really incredible job with this and deserve a lot of credit. So one other thing I wanted to hit on with you today is just to do with the rotation. And it's Manoah. I know I'm looking back a couple of days, but I'm just so unbelievably impressed with him, and I can't let it go. But just how – and maybe it's because the Leaf season is starting, and I'm comparing it to some of the noise around the Toronto Maple Leafs, some of the stuff I'm going to talk with Elliot Friedman about at 10 o'clock, about how Mitch Marner has had a real difficulty apparently quieting his space and not letting outside noise get into his head. And with Manoah, guy comes out, puts the first two runners on, and just battles all day long against against a Rays team that is just full of battlers, right? That just like never lets you have an easy at bat. And no offense to the Blue Jays, but the approach is completely different, right? Blue Jays first pitch team and effective first pitch team, but you can kind of get out of jams against them pretty quickly without elevating your pitch count. The Rays just grind you. They just grinded Robbie Ray. This kid steps in there, I think he's 23, and puts that together, one of the most important wins of the season. Imagine how we'd be feeling if the Jays just got swept, the added urgency of this thing. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I wonder how you quantify that or how you watch that. Someone who's been watching baseball, who loves this game, who's seen so many other teams – I think that we kind of lose perspective in the sport as fans of a team that are not maybe necessarily fans of the sport watching a ton of other market stuff when you just see your guy in comparison to the team, right? Your team on a day-to-day. Like, what are we seeing with Manoah baseball-wide? Because this just feels like very, 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 very special what he's able to accomplish mentally as well as physically this early in a career.
Yeah, and I put the mental part at least as high as the physical part, to be honest with you. And I said during, I think it was during that his game, not yesterday, might have been during yesterday's game, actually, that, you know, the first time I, quote, met him was on a Zoom call. And you get off the Zoom call and you go, wow, that guy's a character. He's got a lot of confidence. Mm-hmm. And then you see him, and then you go watch a AAA start on MILB.TV or whatever it is, and you go, whoa, there's a presence on the mound for this kid. And then you do another Zoom, and then he comes up and he faces the Yankees, and then you do another Zoom. And from the moment I saw him, I said, this confidence is not fake. False bravado is kind of easy to sniff out in some guys. And his was like his confidence is so good that 10% of me said, is this real? Like, is any human being really like this? This is him. This is absolutely him. And then one of the first things I did is started texting or calling some people in the organization and saying, is this real? Like, is this who he is? And you'd get back like, not scared of anything, you know, loves the big moment, like little four-word texts, you know, like that. And I'm all in on his mental ability to deal with adversity. If I were to rank his stuff 1 to 10, like on his stuff, not anybody's stuff, on Tuesday night, he had about a 3 of his stuff. He was nowhere near his best. His command was all over the place. He walked 6 guys and hit a batter, didn't really have a good slider, couldn't do much with his changeup. I mean, he was living on the edge the whole start. And I think most guys, even most major league pitchers, would have succumbed to that, would have given in to that, and the line would have looked a lot different than it did. I think his stuff is really good. He's got a chance to be an upper echelon starting pitcher. But I'm with you. I think what he did mentally in that game, and he's done it before, has shown a ton. The only time I ever saw it change was the game we were talking about earlier when he got thrown out. It's a different game. He hit 2 guys in a row. Remember the game where he hit 2 guys in a row? It was the Josh Harrison game. Hit Harrison, Oakland. And then he hit Marte.
I was there.
And after that, I thought he was a little tentative and that his mojo and his body language kind of changed on the mound. Other than that, and that was only like the last inning of that start, I think he's been unbelievable mentally and emotionally on the mound. And I agree with you. What he did on Tuesday night may be a moment that we should look back at, like the Gurriel Grand Slam against Oakland, and say that was a turning point for this team. Because you give up five hits, six walks, and a hit batter to the Rays in six innings, and you only allow two runs. You're doing something right. And he pitched out of jams, and he didn't allow the moment to get too big for him, and that's pretty special stuff for a rookie.
Yeah, I outlined it yesterday, and I'm just doing this off the top of my head, but I think he's won, like, or he doesn't have wins, but the Jays have won six in a row when he's been on the mound. And I know they've been red hot, too, and there's a lot of different things for this, but it's been against Oakland, two against the Rays, I want to say one against the Yankees and one against the White Sox. It's just, he is pretty good. Before you go, I know you got to run. Where's your Aaron Rodgers confidence meter? I mean, you beat the Lions, so that's good. Like, wow,
that's good.
You deserve a lot of credit for that.
The funny thing is, because of the Blue Jays, I have both of the Packers two games taped, and I haven't watched a second of it. Literally have not seen
Don't watch the first one, Dan.
If I only got 3 hours, I know which one I'm watching. I haven't seen I don't even know that I saw highlights, to be honest with you.
All right.
But he was the MVP last year, so why he looks about 4 years older this year, but he does. Something happened here. I don't know what it is, but as long as he's the same guy, you know, he was the MVP last year, so how much could he have slipped? So, listen, they're a good team. They should be the best team in the division. They got the 49ers Sunday night, don't they? So we'll find out a little bit more about them then. But I am strongly intending to watch the Lions game before the game Sunday night so I can catch up. So I'll have a better take next time. But
You already told me your take. And yeah, that's, you know, you see Rodgers.
Really good. Well, we talked about this 2 weeks ago. They're going to be really good. You know, they'll go 12-5 or something like that. They'll win the division, and they'll break my heart in January. Usual, same old.
Yeah, good news is the division is horrific. The Vikings look shattered. They just had the classic Vikings thing happen. Again, you haven't seen highlights. Vikings had a 30-yard chip shot to win a football game, and guess what happened?
I heard the radio call.
Yeah.
The
radio call, they said it was in, right?
Yeah.
They were like, he did it. And then they're like, no, he didn't.
Yeah.
So good. That's a tough one. Dan Shulman, you're the best. Thanks for making time as always, man.
All right. See you, JD.
Take care. It's a real thing the way Rodgers looks. Tom Brady is stealing something from him. Whatever they're doing. Don't do the Aaron Rodgers one. Do the Tom Brady one. Someone tagged me in a thing that says Tom Brady's eating almonds. That's the secret. He eats 30 almonds, I guess. I actually thought that I talked to Ennis a little bit about this. We just had a phone call, and we were talking about buying the TB12 book and really doing the diet and seeing what happens. So basic, of course, I'm guessing hundreds of thousands, if not over a million people have done the TB12 diet. Think of it as doing the supersize me, except for with something healthy. I don't know. But yeah, seeing essentially who could last the longest doing the TB12 diet, Ennis or I? I honestly don't know who could. I think I would win simply because he would have more temptation around him. His family, the kids, they're making macaroni and cheese. You're really not going to do the dad thing of eating the leftover macaroni and cheese? Doubt it. So yeah, to put a bow on all this Blue Jays stuff, it was weird because yesterday felt like a punt. I do wonder how much it was just, we are going to have a grind these last 2 weeks. We are going to lean on everybody heavily. There is an off day, but nobody's getting any rest. Full tilt. Let's make this push. Tonight, don't worry about it. If we win, we win. Great. It's just hard when you see Dice in the lineup, Lamb in the lineup, McGuire in the lineup with a bullpen game and think, hey, they're getting these guys all in here for one last go. Lamb probably has some other spots, but still felt very puntish. And now the Yankees and the Red Sox are playing each other. And really what we're hoping for is a sweep. have one of these teams get swept. Not trying to be cheeky and get the home playoff game. I'd love it. Would love, love, love it. But I just want to have the Blue Jays be in it. I don't want to have it come down to the final game of the season against the Orioles. Especially considering I got a weird sports bad gut feeling about the Orioles now caring more about playing the Blue Jays because of the Robbie Ray thing, where Ray was essentially accusing them of tipping his slider to the guys that were taking the at-bats. How he gets into it with the manager. There's just a little bit of added fuel there that I don't love. I think that the Orioles now will get up for games against the Blue Jays a little bit more than they would games against anybody else. Because of that. I think those things are real. And it's also, it's interesting that the Jays have played this entire season where they have been the team everybody loves. That even Red Sox fans and Yankees fans, and I would guess Rays fans, that apparently there are now because all of a sudden now they're showing up at the Trop. Orioles fans, if they exist, if they haven't been beaten into submission with what I want to say is now five straight sub 100 or 100 plus loss seasons, boy. Or this will be the fifth straight. Yuck. That now these fan bases maybe aren't loving them so much. I don't think Yankees fans liked the Blue Jays after they got swept at home. I don't think that the Orioles fans much cared for the Robbie Ray incident. And of course, they're going to back their guys. And now certainly Rays fans don't like the Blue Jays. It's a good thing to be hated. Not in every way, but in this way, it's great. Means that teams fear you. Means that you're dangerous. The Jays are dangerous. And I hope that the Rogers Center is going to have some more people in it for the final homestand. That would be great. It is, because I'll be honest. I know that optically some people are going to go like, oh, there's still a pandemic. And why are we adding more people right now? Let's just not add the risk. There's so much space in that stadium. There's so much space. They don't have anybody in the 500s. And I, you know me, ticket snob me, I would never sit up there. But there's so much space up there. Just put more people in the 500s. It's fine. We'll be okay. Will our picks be okay? I'm a little sour. I'm going to do it with Pat Gregoire tomorrow because old Cool Bet Chris is taking Friday off because he's doing another one of his travels. He's on another adventure. This guy is a jet setter. Last week in our super contest, my submissions, I pitched three things. Cowboys, Raiders, Packers. They all covered. I was pushed back on in the group. They took three different things. Chiefs, Seahawks, Rams. None of which covered. Basically, those guys owe me $1 million. Is what I'm getting at here. The Cool Bet guys owe me $1 million. It's fine, but they do. I'm sure they got it. I'm sure they got it. Chris, with all these travels, he's got it. He's gonna send me something soon. I'll ask Joe Osborne for some help. Thursday night football, you're going to have to bet this one because it's Jags. No, it's they're all the same. I think it's Texans, Panthers. That's what I'm going to say it is. Texans, Panthers, Thursday night football. This is real Thursday night football. NFC South, AFC South. Two teams going head to head. Put the color rush jerseys on. We're ready for it. Let's make some picks for this game and maybe some picks for down the stretch. In baseball, Joe Osborne, Odds Shark. It's a Thursday. Good show. JD Bunkus, Sportsnet 590 of the Fan. It's a good show. Sportsnet 590 of the Fan. I'm JD Bunkus. Hit me up anytime on the socials. Twitter and Instagram at JD Bunkus. I have not done any research for Texans Panthers. I will say this, though. I've watched an inordinate amount of Texans, way more Texans than I would have thought at this point, because I had Trevor Lawrence in fantasy football. I obviously started him week one. I want to see how the kid looked, watched him play the Texans. Didn't bet on it, but we know what happened. And then I did bet the Browns last week, teased it down to 5.5. So the Texans get out to this like pretty solid start, and then Tyrod pulls a hammy, the Tyrod Taylor story. Unlucky, something with an injury, just when you get a feeling that Tyrod's going to have a good moment for himself, something bad happens. Now this rookie QB steps in here, who actually looked pretty competent against the Browns, and the game was not out of hand. This wasn't like some weird backdoor cover for him. He really did, I thought, step in and deliver. And now he's playing a Panthers team that is favored by 8 points tonight. I'll tell you this, blind bet, very little prep, this has got to be the over for me. Over 43 tonight, single one-off game, you know Mr. Public is betting the over in this game. Let's see if the sharp is as well. It's Joe Osborne, Odds Shark. What's up, bro? How's the prep?
Man, what a burn burner we have here. Classic Thursday.
Yeah, what a game.
Right?
I'm sure this will be the game that we all talk about. Remember when there was Rams-Chiefs and it was, this is the way the NFL is going now, and this is the real eye-opening game of, oh, wow, how the league is going to be trending. I'm sure that Panthers-Texans will resonate in the same way 5 years from now.
Yeah, 100%. And, a bit of a tricky game to handicap, but the conclusion I've come to is I'm going to take Panthers -8. And I think this is the game where the Texans meet their expectations coming into the season. What I mean by that, they came into the season with the lowest win total of all 32 teams, an awful roster, a questionable head coach hire. But they've come up the first 2 weeks of the season and they've exceeded those expectations a little bit. Now they're in a really tough spot, 4 days to prepare, with David Mills making his first ever start versus a team that might be the breakout team here of 2021. Like, sure, you could look at Carolina's defense. You look at all their numbers, some of the best numbers in the league. Now, some people might say, Joe, they played the Jets and they played the Saints. They were missing half their coaching staff or whatever the case was for that game. But sure, they've done what good teams are supposed to do, and they went out and absolutely obliterated those teams in that situation. So they kind of exploited those weaknesses of those teams, jumped all over it. And that kind of brings us to David Mills. 8 of 18 and released versus the Browns in week 2. So he didn't absolutely kill them by any means, but he didn't light it up either. Now he's taking on the team that forced the highest QB pressure of any team in the NFL so far, and is allowing the second lowest completion percentage from quarterbacks. So I think it's a tough spot for Davis Mills. Sam Darnold, is he good now? I'm not going to make a case that he's a top 10 quarterback in the league by any means, but he might be a new man with this new coaching staff and the stench of the Jets behind him. You know, he's thrown for 305 and 279 to start the season. That's why I like his over 265.5. tonight. He's going to have all day to throw here to the Texans, generating the fifth lowest QB pressure so far this season. Some injuries in their secondary, which isn't really good to begin with. And you take a look at what Baker Mayfield did versus him last week. He completed 19 of 21 passes, easily the highest completion percentage of his career. Trevor Lawrence, you mentioned him, he threw for a 332 against him there in week 1. So I think Darnold goes over 265.5. But, might be a good night to watch some baseball here and have this one on
screen, right? Oh, yeah. This is second screen tonight. I will say that my impression so far of Darnold has been good, not great. And a lot of his stats are inflated by the old Christian McCaffrey checkdowns. Like, it's always really nice when you can throw it to your back in the backfield and he picks you up 30 yards and they go, look at this. Look at these passes. Oh, it's the average completion for Darnold. It's why I think the bet of the night for me, and it's basically the bet of, you know, every Panthers game when they face an inferior opponent like this that I don't think is going to score, is McCaffrey first touchdown at +320. I'm definitely going to bang that. I'm going to bang the over on McCaffrey's receiving yards too. It's high. It's 50 yards. You know, you look at that and say it's 49.5. I'm taking the over on McCaffrey tonight. This is your classic. If he doesn't stay hurt, if you're facing him in your fantasy league, nightmare night, right? This Texans team, lead, McCaffrey, checkdowns, tons of offense, good defense going up against a rookie quarterback where the Panthers are going to have the ball a ton. Like, if this is the game script that you and I both believe in, I highly suggest ripping a lot of Christian McCaffrey props. Don't think that you can really go wrong there. I like the assessment. Is there anything this weekend that you love? Is there anything this weekend that you're like, I'm jumping on it right now, I'm not letting a moment pass?
Yeah, I was kind of surprised to see that the Ravens are only -7.5 versus the Detroit Lions. Now, the Ravens have had a bit of a funny season. They probably should have won that game in week one there versus the Raiders, and they probably should have lost in week two versus the Chiefs, but they had the opposite thing happen each week. But check this out. So the Lions, you know, they're going to be one of the worst teams in the league this season. And the Ravens do not mess around versus inferior competition. They are 14-1. In their last 15 games versus teams with losing record with an average win margin of 17.9. So they put their foot on the gas versus these teams, and they keep their foot on the gas, and they come into this matchup with the Lions ranked 6th in yards per play, Detroit 27th in yards per play allowed. Detroit's defense has allowed a touchdown on 100% of opponent trips to the red zone. Baltimore has scored a TD on 100% of trips to the red zone. Now, we're working with very small sample sizes here, right? So we got to keep that in mind. But, you know, I go off of what I've seen so far. And, you know, I think we see the Ravens kind of hit their stride a little bit in this one and come out with a convincing win. So I don't mind that, the -7.5. If you're a teaser better, I like the Cardinals and the Browns getting both of them inside of the field goal on Monday Night Football. I like the over between Dallas and the Eagles to go over 51.5. Dallas, high-scoring games in Dallas. 8 of the last 10 games there have gone over. 7 of those games saw the teams combine for 63 or more points. So we know Dallas's offense can light it up. Now, and their defense stinks, and they're going up against a team in the Eagles, who I think is going to look a lot more like they did in Week 1 against a pretty bad defense in the Falcons. You know, they got all that speed at wide receiver. So I could see a high-scoring game on Monday night.
I am so furious with the Cowboys and you mentioning that, like 8 of 10 going over, because I had the last leg of a teaser parlay snapped with the Cowboys over 48.5 points last week against the Chargers. And I got 2 Cowboys touchdowns in the first quarter, a Chargers field goal. I'm sitting there with 17 thinking, I don't really even need to pay attention to this game. This is going to happen for me. You know, like this is a lock. This was the easiest thing on the card. This was the easiest thing on the slate today, was knowing that neither of these defenses was going to get a stop. And I put that, I didn't even say it. I didn't even tweet it. I didn't do anything. I didn't text it. I just put that energy out into the universe with that thought. And guess what happened? The Cowboys didn't score another touchdown all game. And all of a sudden, my boy Justin Herbert's throwing interceptions in the red zone. Just the over-betters nightmare. Ugh, disgusting. Joe, always great, man. Appreciate the picks. And, yeah, I'm with you on a couple of these. Let's ride. Let's ride tonight. See you, Joe.
Thank you, my man. Good luck to you. Good luck to all the listeners out there.
See you, bro. Joe Osborne from Odds Shark. Yeah, blind over for me tonight. Definitely McCaffrey props for me tonight. Whew. 8 points is a lot to lay for a team on the road, but yeah. And Joe mentioned the kid's stats, Mills' stats. I would just say that he did lead a touchdown drive against the Cleveland Browns and drop him in the game. It was an impressive drive. And watch him tonight look completely terrible. Panthers' defense looks fast. Looks really, really fast. They got some playmakers on defense, so could be tough for him. Could be really, really tough for him. But the Browns have a lot of playmakers too. I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to play the sides in this one. I might just play the total because it's a one-off. And, yeah, that's the only way that I can even have a passing interest in this game. Panthers, Texans. You got to be kidding me. When we come back, Elliot Friedman, 31 Thoughts. Good show. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Good show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. It's all about not making mistakes when you're a journalist, you know, and you try to learn from Elliot Friedman because he's the best. And so, you know, I don't want to blow this. Is it 31 thoughts or is it 32 thoughts? Like, where, what are we doing? What are we? Who are you now?
I've been struggling to find my identity for 51 years, JD. I don't think this conversation is going to answer it. 32. It's a mindset, okay. JD. It's okay. 32 teams in the league. It's a mindset.
Okay. So the podcast is also 32 thoughts moving forward then.
Yes. I don't think the logo is done yet. I'm not sure. But it is 32 thoughts. It is 32 now. Yes.
They got you guys like a huge billboard, and they were like, look at this huge billboard, 31 thoughts. And they're like, yeah, they should have planned that one out better, probably.
Yeah, you know what? As my grandmother used to say, you plan, God laughs. So it's funny how that always works.
Yeah. So I'm listening to the podcast. Yeah, I'm doing well, man. How are you? Like, I'm assuming that the summer was – the summer was very fast, I feel like. It just cruised by. It felt slow in moments. Like, that's COVID, right? It's like my concept of time is just completely lost. I still haven't gotten my bearings back where I'm like, I still don't know what day of the week it is. Sometimes I'm doing Wednesdays or Fridays. I don't know. Like, yeah, how about you?
You know, it's funny you mention that because, you know, like, I resisted doing like radio. Like, normally I'm doing radio and things right after Labor Day, but because I didn't get off until August, and for like a lot of people in the industry, it was like the first vacation in 23 months. Mm-hmm. I'm really looking forward to my life clock getting back on track this
year. Yes. That was something I think a lot of people experienced in our industry. I know I felt it, like, not to go too deep diving, but I actually think that we are going to talk a little bit about some of the mental stuff around hockey in this discussion. But how, you know, in August, I want to say, maybe early August, I was starting to take a little bit of vacation, like a couple of days off here, like a little bit here, a little bit there. I haven't had Ennis now for like 2 months, which has been strange.
That's a vacation too, yes.
Well, yeah, for him. Like, he goes from me to Brunt. It's like, okay, he's feeling pretty good about that. But yeah, I would take weeks off, or I would have my little vacation time, and I'd come back and I just did not feel refreshed. Like, I never could get that feeling of, oh, now I'm back in the seat and wanting to do this. And to be honest, like, I think the Blue Jays were a huge kind of kick in the ass for me of, wow, okay, I'm excited to do this thing again. Like, had they not gotten back into this playoff race, and then I'm grinding into this year and I'm looking ahead to a Leaf season where I don't know how it's going to be doing this job and talking about the Leafs on a day-to-day basis, because there's like, it's so divided, it feels political at this point. Like, if you say a positive thing, people are going to be angry. If you say a negative thing, people are going to be furious. Like, everyone wants more blood. People want to move on. It's just, it's not a great place. It's really not. And then you've got sort of a bit of an odd Raptor season coming up. So, thank you, Blue Jays, is all I'm saying. Thank you. Thank you, Blue Jays.
It's funny you say that. I agree with a lot of what you said there, JD. I'm not doing, I'm not like a first responder or a nurse.
Of course.
Dealing with COVID or anything like that. So, or a doctor dealing with COVID. So in no way do I equate what I was going through with anyone like that. But I just remember on the day of free agency this year, you know, basically we've been going for 23 months straight.
Yeah.
I was burnt out. I was. And, you know, August I took off. We went up to a cottage for a couple weeks. I found I really needed that. And I really like watching the Jays. Like, I'm a big baseball fan, and I'm with you. As the Jays started the rise and started to get back into it, I was really getting into the games, and I was just enjoying it, watching it as a fan, and not, oh, I don't have to think about this angle, or I don't have to talk about this. And, you know, I think Joe Siddall is, I mean, he's been unbelievable, just watching his stuff every night. He's brought his A game as the Jays have brought their A game. And, I found it very refreshing and very interesting. You know, I think sometimes I think about this a lot, actually. I think sometimes that, you know, when you're in the business, like you and I and a lot and all the people we work with, I think sometimes we forget that people who watch us and listen to us, they want these things to be an escape, right? Especially now, especially with everything we've gone through the last 2 years. And, you know, sometimes we have to cover harder things. It's necessary and it has to happen. But I don't know if our viewers want that. I think our viewers want it to be an escape. And I think sometimes when the topics get a little harder, they're like, I was hoping to watch this because I wanted to get away from all this. And I think it's a really tough balance that we have to deal with sometimes. I totally understand where you're coming from.
I'll pivot it to hockey. I'll move it. But it's similar vein, right? So I'm listening to what is now going to be 32 Thoughts, the podcast. You talk with Marner and you talk with Matthews. And just much like, you know, you referenced Joe Siddle. And this show is very much a Joe Siddle show where I bring it up all the time how I'm actually very grateful as someone who watches a lot of sports that we have Joe who breaks down the games. When you come back to studio, when you get that,
his stuff has been fantastic.
Yeah, it's incredible. And I'm not trying to take a shot at other people, but it is a very different studio analyst from a lot of other studio analyst shows, right? Like it's just, I just hope people never take that stuff for granted. And I felt very similar listening to you and Jeff interview both Matthews and Marner, where they both sit down with you guys and you have the gravitas to ask pretty difficult questions. And I know that, like, I do this same job, and it's hard to ask those things, and maybe not as much when you're you, but you approach the topic about Marner letting in the noise, and you brought up, and I don't want to, like, you know, misquote you here or anything, but you brought up the idea that, you know, his camp is not always great, and that he has had some difficulty tuning things out. There are a lot of factors that go with it. You know, he's 24 years old. He's from this market. He signed that massive deal. But listening to him and Matthews go back to back on your podcast and just the difference in the way that they handled themselves and just, you know, you asking the question to Matthews and his approach and then you asking the question to Marner and almost to me anyways, this is just me, it almost sounded like he still wasn't prepared for that question or he was still incredibly uncomfortable with that question despite an entire offseason where it's like, that is the focus. And I couldn't help but feel like hearing him yesterday as well at the media availabilities and his approach and how PR driven it was and how it just didn't really have a human touch to it, that I don't have a lot of confidence going into this year that he is as prepared as maybe he needs to be to block out that noise or that there is going to be a notable shift where he has taken a step towards blocking it out.
You know, it's all really good what you just said, JD. And, you know, I think that, you know, to me now, and you know, I'm about to turn 51, I think the most valuable thing I think in the world is life experience, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, those guys, they're young guys. They're still, you know, people forget they're still in their early 20s. And I just know how much better I am at just handling the crap that life throws at you just at 51 than I was at 25. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes we forget that, you know, even if you're an elite level athlete that can make to the NHL and you're among the best of the best that those two guys are, and you're paid extremely well as those two guys are, I think sometimes we think that you can handle everything that comes with that. And everybody's built differently. Like I said it in the podcast and I wrote it this week, I think Matthews is an assassin. Mm-hmm. I really do. I think he is built to handle this. Like, God only knows what his future is going to be, if it's going to be here or somewhere else. But if he stays here, he can handle this. I think there's a whole other side to his personality. And I hope we eventually get to see it because I think the sport needs to see it. He's tipped it off to us from time to time. Like with the red coat, I always love the red coat.
Yeah,
I think about the red coat. I just think that he's I think he's one of those guys. Like the Sedins were like this. They could handle Vancouver. Mm-hmm. You know, Subban, he could handle Montreal before he was traded. Matthews, he can handle this. If he wants to stay here forever, he can handle this. I have no doubt about it. Not zero. He's got that mentality. He's like a killer. Marner, he's a Toronto guy. Merrick, I forgot to mention that. Merrick made a good point about that. He's a Toronto guy. You know, like he, like you saw the media conference he had when they lost last year. Like that was a guy who was really hurt by how it went. He knew he didn't play well. He heard the things that people were saying about him, and he couldn't block it out. And the reason I asked him that question, JD, is that I know that was a big thing for them this summer. Like, you have to, because they think that part of the reason he reacted that way was because he heard everything and he couldn't escape it. And that's why, like, I know, like, JD, you and I are on social. I know some of the things that, like, you know, most of it I laugh at. It takes an awful lot to bother me, like, a lot. Like, if I block or mute you, you're probably a horrible human being. Like, you really have to get to a level where I'm going to do that to you. And but it took me time to get there. I'm sure you've had things that have been written to you that are said to you that go way over the line. But we don't get it like he gets it. And I know they've said to him, you have to do a better job of that. And the people around you have to do a better job of that. So that's why it came up. And you're right. I think it's a process. I hope he will get there. I know that the people around him believe he'll get there, but it takes time and you kind of have to, you know, get the scars have to heal, I guess, before you can get there.
Yeah. And I'm so torn on it because when I was 24 years old, I think I was like interning still at the Fan. Or I was close to it or somewhere along there. And God, my level of maturity then versus now is night and day. Like, I'm sure you even remember me when I was, you know, producing Walker's show and spouting opinions that people are just, you know, that you do change with time and you do get better at handling these things. You get better at handling criticism. You get more perspective. Like, it's just, you're right. Time is the most valuable thing for changing you. You learn to self-reflect. You get tips from people, you read more, you know, you go through more experiences that change you and alter the way that you look at life. I guess where I'm at with him is that he's kind of in his prime, like 24 years old, like sports are getting younger and younger and younger to the point where, you know, we're now looking at someone who's 30 years old in professional sports and John Tavares going, hey, what are you going to get out of this guy this year? Like, are you going to get
you're a ROI? Geezer.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And so I look at him from a human standpoint and I say, man, I really empathize with you, especially considering, you know, some of the stuff that does surround him. But then when I look at it from a hockey standpoint, and you and I talked a little bit about this earlier with the idea of some people want the escape, right? And when Mitch Marner makes $11 million, a hockey fan is not always going to be like, well, he's 24 years old. He's 24 years old making $11 million and playing for a glamour franchise and, you know, posting pictures of him and his beautiful wife and dog at a cottage and playing video games in his off time. Like, it's and doing Apple commercials, right? Like, it's a different life being friends with Justin Bieber. And I don't think that they can, like, I do think that there is a balance here. And I guess what I'm trying to get at is yesterday and on your podcast, I felt like that jump, that leap for him emotionally, maturity wise, I don't think it's there yet. He was so adversarial, so hurt, as you said, at the end of those media conferences. And I got a little frustrated on this show yesterday. And yes, I took a lot of social media hate for it. Because I said, this guy just needs to have a human moment. Like, eventually, people just have to let go of the reins with him and let him just be a guy. Someone who says, like, truthfully, not from a PR note, doesn't read from the script, hey, this hurt me. Like, say the things that you just said about him that we can all understand and realize. He's from here. I don't know if it would be a bit of a leap for him to acknowledge how much the contract has weighed on him publicly. But just like, because again, it's like what, you know, you did take $11 million. But just how he's from here. He cares about this team, that he wants to win. He loves hockey and that he's 24 and he's learning and he's trying to get better and doing his best. But instead it's always like, yeah, well, you know, we can't do anything about it now and we're moving forward. And it's just so robotic and it's so like unhuman that it's really, really hard to relate to him. It's really hard to empathize with him. And I think it's making it worse. And I think it's going to be really, really hard for him to go into a season when he's posting, you know, videos with Drake lyrics of, like, it's me versus the world. If you're not prepared to be kind of like the Kobe Bryant Mamba mentality, where you're really actually willing to accept being villainous and being disliked and still being able to rise above it. Like, I just think he's signing himself up for a bit more than he can chew.
Well, you know, there's a lot of interesting that you said there, JD. And, you know, there's a couple different places I'm going to go. I'm going to start here. So one of the things that I'm a good compartmentalizer. Okay. I'm generally like, we all have our moments where we get overwhelmed, but most of the time I'm very good. Like, if if something is bothering me and my personal life, like my mm-hmm. wife is justifiably angry about something I did because it's probably my fault, mm-hmm. I'm very good at saying, okay, it's time to go to work. So I got to put that away and concentrate mm-hmm. on work. And so I think you have to be that. And, you know, Matthew said the same kind of things too, but he just says them in a different way, as you said. Like Matthew said, you know, hey, it took a long time for him to get over what happened last year, but eventually you have to realize you can't do anything about that and move on. And one of the challenges this year, and for the Leafs as a team is, like, well, first of all, they're going to have whether we think so or not, I think it's going to be a fight for the playoffs this season. I think that division's going to be tough. Like, I look at, you know, Buffalo and Detroit, they're 7th and 8th. Tampa, to me, is 1, but I was really interested in hearing Stamkos say in the interview that we aired yesterday that mm-hmm. last year they said, we don't care where we finish in the regular season, we'll get into the playoffs and we'll handle everything there. But they're going to be in, right? So mm-hmm. then you've got 5 teams for 3 spots. You've got Boston, you've got Montreal, you've got Toronto, you've got Ottawa, and right now I'm forgetting Florida, who I think is really good. And so it's going to be a battle. But the other thing too is that in a lot of ways, and the Leafs are trying to convince their players that this is going to be a fight and they better be ready for it. So, but they're not going to be judged until the playoffs, right? So I think one of the things you have to do is, and I thought about this as broadcasting this season too, JD, is how do you talk about a team that isn't going to be judged until the playoffs?
Yeah.
And the only way you can do that is you say, because like the calendar says the playoffs don't start till April. Well, it's almost October. So how do you deal with that for 82 games between now and then? And the only way you can do it is say, today is my challenge. Can't worry about the past. I can't worry about the future. Today is my challenge. So the fact that both of them are talking about it like that says to me that there's either a mentality between the two of them or a mentality with all of them where they've said, this is our point of attack for the year. Now, the things I like about what Marner said is, number one, him and Matthews were supposed to go skate together. They hadn't done that in the offseason before, but they had made plans that Marner was going to go to Arizona and skate together. And they couldn't because Matthews had surgery. But I like that. Number two, they both said they talked a lot. And one of the things they did was send clips to each other about how to make plays better in small areas or tight spaces. And actually, I got a note from a coach about that, saying that if he was the Leafs and their fans, he would have been very happy to hear that because it's the kind of thing that you have to do in the playoffs. And he thought that was a really good thing that probably didn't get noticed. But the other thing I just think, too, is that I think the Olympics are going to be huge for players like Marner. Like, Matthews is going to the Olympics. He's on that team. Like, he would, like, if he went scoreless in 50 games, he might still be on the team. Okay. Yeah. Marner, I think he's probably going to be on the team, but I don't think his place is as secure. And I think there's going to be a lot of players this year who look at the Olympics and say, boy, do I want to be on that team. And they're going to come out of the gate like they've been shot out of a cannon. And at the recent camp, the BioSteel camp, Marner skated with McKinnon. And we know McKinnon's going to be on that team. McDavid skated with Crosby. We know they're going to be on that team. You don't think Marner's thinking, I could be Nathan McKinnon's winger in Beijing. I better get off to a great start. I'll bet you a bajillion dollars that he's thinking that.
I think that's a great point, and it's also what I would hope to see potentially, you know, if we're doing narrative stuff, but narrative stuff that could actually matter is how much playing in the Olympics could actually help Mitch. The idea of him being on that stage, belonging, playing in big pressure games, being around a ton of other leaders, a lot of Canadians, high stakes, could be good for him coming back to this team. I'm going to try to rapid fire a couple of things. I know you got to go.
No, I got time.
Morgan Riley. Like, if we're talking about Team Canada guys, I feel like he's kind of on that outside bubble too, right? Some people have him in, some people have him out. He's probably got a bit of a shot. Yesterday at the podium, he's talking, you know, there's a business side too. He spoke, I thought, pretty honestly as well, where I think that it resonates when he does say what being a Toronto Maple Leaf means to him. Dubas, like, he said that they're not going to get into it and that there's all these other teams that are dealing with it. But mm-hmm. he also, you know, there was a moment in the media conference where someone called them the Core Four and he took umbrage with it and he said, we don't call them that and we've got more of a core here than just four guys and blah, blah, blah. But Morgan yeah. Riley doesn't have a contract and Zach Hyman just walked and you would have considered him to be, you know, core. Like at least last season, we knew there was potentially he was going to leave, but I still viewed Hyman as one of the core guys to their success. I view Riley as that this year, yet no deal. I'm guessing that they're really trying to squeeze him because they're already up against the cap. It's going to be really, really tough. He's what, turning 28 this year. But mm-hmm. I wonder for a guy that's only, you know, 3 years older than Marner and Matthews, not being within the core from a contract standpoint, going into this season, knowing historically guys have all kind of had to leave to get the bag and to be acknowledged by the organization, how you think this is actually going to play out? Like, he left the door open, but there was a touch of, man, maybe this is a little bit uglier than you would think.
Well, I think this, you know, like you, I watched all that yesterday. I think that, I would bet that the Leafs and Riley, both sides, know exactly what it's going to take to sign him. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, pretty close. I'm sure the Leafs have said to him, we might need you to take a little bit less. And there's no question in my mind, Riley loves being a Leaf. He loves being a Leaf. He's not lying. He appreciates that they took a chance on him. And, you know, he loves being a Leaf. Like, when they made Tavares the captain, there were two other choices. One was Matthews and the other was Riley that they considered. And, you know, they ultimately gave it to Tavares, but Riley was in the conversation. And I think the organization really loves him and really, you know, respects everything that he's done for them. So I think in a perfect world, they would keep him. You know, two things. Number one, you know, the defense market has exploded. And, you know, if Riley has a big year, and I agree with you, he's on the bubble for the Olympics. If he has a big start to the year, then, you know, he's gonna be in the conversation. I think that's a motivating factor. You know, number two, and this is something that the Leafs have had to deal with, is that there are players on the team who look and say, look, you've got a bunch of players here who didn't have to take less. And so why should other players have to take less? But everybody's different, right? Like I think Hyman was willing to leave money on the table. I just think that came down to his like clauses, like no move or no trade protection, which is why it didn't happen. But everybody makes their choice. So I just think that right now you look at where the D market is, what Seth Jones, Dougie Hamilton, Zach Werenski, all those guys and what they did last year. And I think that's the question. And I think at the end, but the thing is too, is that I can see a point where, you know, like the one thing is this year is that if the Leafs don't have a good year, but at least win around JD, everything's going to change.
Yeah.
And what if Morali has a big year and they just say, look, Morgan, hang on. At the end of the season, we're going to do some other things that are going to allow us to keep you. I think that could potentially happen too.
Yeah. And he seemed, again, open to just about everything. Just, you know how it is in competitive industries when there are people that are below you that get a lot of hype. And it's a natural idea for a lot of us to connect the dots between, oh, well, they have Sandin and he's a left shot defenseman who provides you some offensive upside, who's going to be a lot cheaper, and who at some point is going to have to jump up into your top four. And when we're talking about core and money and asking to take less, the idea that you're replaceable and the idea that you have not been taken care of, I wonder even for like a nice guy like Morgan Riley and someone who does care about the Toronto Maple Leafs, you know, how much becomes too much before you start to, you know, actually, again, noise, let it bother you. Ilya Mikheyev, he looks like he's going to be on a line potentially with David Kampf. David Kampf has 17 goals in 235 NHL games. You reported about the trade request. It's hard for me to imagine that him playing beside a guy with, I'm going to just say, kind of zero offensive game is going to satisfy him. Is this something where maybe the Leafs do the Joe Thornton Martin's up the lineup thing to start the year, or who is the other one, the other vet that got a spot? Ennis. Tyler Ennis got a look early in his season. I know that was injury related, but it still happened. Do you think that Mikheyev gets a shot here to really compete for one of those top winger positions? Because it does feel like if he's back in that defensive role, that that's likely anyways, if I'm just trying to understand what has upset him, that that is going to only make the problem worse.
I just think that, you know, as you saw yesterday, they wouldn't really address that request. And from what I understand, the answer Dubas gave was the answer that that he gave Mikheyev was, we're not trading you, and we expect you to come here this year and be ready to have a big year. Like, they need Mikheyev to be great at his salary slot, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, the one thing about Mikheyev was, he was having a great year until he got hurt that first season. Didn't have, like, I look at him, I see a really talented player. He just needs to finish better. Now, I don't know if that can be taught. I don't know. Like, I think he's a career 6.5% shooter.
Yeah.
If he got that up a little bit, he'd have a huge impact. And I think that's what they see too. I think they see a guy who gets a ton of scoring chances, who just needs to bury some of them. And I think they, you know, they took a lot of pride in finding him. I think he's a very useful player. And I think they want to reap the rewards. Like, if he goes out and has a big year and gets a big contract, I think they'll deal with that. And but I agree with your theory in the sense, JD, that, you know, just because you start somewhere this year doesn't mean you're going to finish there. There's always injuries. There's always people struggle from time to time. I completely agree with you. There's going to be opportunity for him.
Yeah, I like him. He's so fast. He anticipates the play really well. Obviously, he's got great defensive upside to his game, the size, everything, his ability to get to the net. But yeah, the finishing has been a problem, and I just don't know how that's going to improve if you're playing with David Kampf, you know? And it's like, okay, and you're still getting your 14 minutes a night. And I don't know how patient you can be with it.
All those things that you said there,
yeah,
it's so true. Like, he breaks up plays and he creates chances.
Yep.
And no matter who you play with, if you have that ability, you're going to get that, right?
Yeah.
You know, we'll see.
It's true.
You know, we'll see. I you know, it is true. It's like he's got to be more like the closer, like Romano. He's got to close things. That's what has to happen here.
Just like eight more times. Like, yeah. Just eight.
Score
just
eight, on of,
eight
those.
Of those. Just
breakaways.
Shovel them in. Like, I just find a way. Last one. If you could give Kyle Dubas truth serum about one thing about this team.
Ooh.
What would you use it on? What's the bullet going to?
I would love to hear. That's a great question. I would love. You know what it would be? It would be, I would want to sit down with him, and watch Game 7 last year, and have an honest answer of what he thought, and how it dictated their future. And their off season.
I mean, they said they wanted killer instinct, and I guess it's all internal because, again, Kampf and Kasha and Nick Ritchie didn't exactly scream that to me.
Well,
it wasn't
Ritchie,
like, oh, well.
Ritchie has that. Like, he can be that player. There's
like
there's,
killer instinct, as in he'll hit you hard in the face like a killer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, you know, but I think Matthews has that. I really do think he has it. And you know what? I think Marner has it. I think he's just learning to, like, you know, you talked earlier, to, just because, again, it goes back to what we said, JD, just because you're highly paid and just because you're an extremely talented player doesn't mean you're prepared for everything that comes with this, especially at that age. And Marner is still growing into it. And, you know, like, I think you said it. Sometimes we forget that, you know, like look at all the stuff that Jonathan Drouin just talked about in his two interviews with TVA and RDS. Mm-hmm. You know, just because, like, everybody here who's listening to this interview knows someone they work with or live with or know that has all the talent in the world, but battles to harness the mental battle of it all, right? Like, just because you're extremely talented and you're highly compensated doesn't mean that you can always handle everything that comes with it. We all know people like that. So you have to grow and you have to learn. And I know they've placed a premium on that in his particular case. And just as a human being, I hope he gets there. Cause I think, you know, I think if those two guys ever learn that, like, look out. And I think the league sees that too. And I think Matthews has that mentality. And I think Marner is learning that mentality. And if they get there together, that's what Toronto sees. Like, that's what Dubas sees. He knows that if they can get there, they've got potentially something very special. And that's why he's doubling down and tripling down and now quadrupling down, because he sees it every day and he knows what it could be. And he's pot committed. He's going to bet on it.
Yeah, boy, it's going to, again, he's really put media members in a tough spot with things to talk about this year. This is going to be.
Well, that's the way I'm looking at it. Like, actually, it's funny. Like, yeah. We have our first game on Saturday night, our
Unreal.
First exhibition game. And that's one of the things I was thinking, like, what do I say about these guys all year? And because I understand what everybody thinks, and I think the same way. But the calendar says September. So you better find things to talk about for 80 games until then.
I think I'll be fine because I've never been one to be at a loss for words, but I still think it's going to be a lot of here's a take, and then fans are going to be like, yeah, but sure. I said it reminds me a little bit after the Raptors lost to LeBron for the second time, and people were like, what are we watching?
I think it's very fair. Very fair. Yeah.
What are we waiting for? We're waiting
anyway.
For LeBron.
Like, you know, yeah. Please tune in anyway, fans. We need the
viewers.
Yes,
please. Yes. Guess what? They're going to tune into you just fine. I think 32 Thoughts will be just as successful as 31 Thoughts. Elliot Freeman, thanks for making time, man, as always.
All right. You take care, JD. Be well.
Take care, man. Elliot Freeman, 32 Thoughts. Kept him for way too long. When we come back, another Friedman, more Friedman, just a different one. Rob, MLB and ESPN pitching contributor. You might know him as the pitching ninja. That's next. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Audio Jungle.
Rob Friedman of ESPN. MLB.com, and you know him as the pitching ninja. Hey, man, how's it going?
Going great. How about y'all?
Doing very well. Love your work. It's phenomenal. I love, because everyone gets so stuck in their own bubble when it comes to baseball. It's really not a national sport, especially when your team is hot, right? And you're watching your team, they're in a race. And it's a vital, critical import for a sport like baseball to have social media accounts like your own, where we actually get to see what other pitchers do and highlighting how they have their successes. So let's start with this. Are we too much in our bubble to be thinking that Robbie Ray is the Cy Young favorite?
You are not too much in your bubble. He is my Cy Young favorite as well.
There we go. This is what I like to hear. At least now you know that it's like a local show now, so you're like, let's play to the audience. No, but it's strange, right? Because it Gerrit Cole has that big blow-up performance, and we're kind of doing this game-by-game thing in a massive sample size. Like, do you get the same sense, too, that this thing is legitimately going to come down to the final two starts of the season? And also, do you think at all it should matter about whether one team makes the playoffs and the other doesn't?
So I do think it's coming down to the wire. I think Robbie Ray's got probably a neck in front at this point. I flip-flop all the time. So, like, it's not like I have this magic crystal ball that I can get this right. Like, I had Cole winning it, and then Ray just has been pitching so well. And Cole stumbled a little bit, and I think that's all Ray needed. Like, Ray has been nothing but sensational. I think he's got the lead. If he blows up a couple of times and Cole pitches outstanding, maybe that flips. Right now, though, he could coast to the wire, I think.
So the interesting thing
regarding team performance, I think it does matter a tiny bit.
Mm-hmm. we are watching Ray do this too, and it's a little strange because he's got the free agent contract coming up. And I don't know what to make of the fact that, like, he throws two pitches. Like, 90% of his pitches are fastball slider. And for a guy with his track record, it makes you think, like, one, well, A, you want to keep him because the rotation has been phenomenal. He's going to win a Cy Young. But B, do you have hesitancy with a guy with that kind of arsenal at his age looking at something where it's likely going to be over $20 million a season?
You know, maybe, like, I prefer my pitchers to have a little bit deeper arsenal. But Ray, I think by simplifying his game, he's taken it to a whole nother level, and it has to work with your mental approach too. He is a very aggressive pitcher that just shoves the ball. And I think those two pitches are a great combo for him, especially when you look at them working together, like they work off each other really well. So yeah, he may want to, you know, he does throw a changeup and may want to throw it more in future years, but he doesn't have to now.
Yeah. It's been nuts. It really has been watching this guy where when they acquired him, they traded away some relief pitcher. I can't even remember the name of. I always get it wrong. It's like Daniel Bergen or Berger or something along those lines because he came back to the Blue Jays. He was so irrelevant. And I remember thinking at the time, why did they trade for a guy who walks everyone? And now I'm like, please don't let this guy go, even though, yeah, the arsenal is what it is. Do you think that the Orioles had anything on him? Like, a lot was made of that start against them where they were really laying off the slider and hunting the fastball. And he got upset about it. Obviously, it resulted in a dispute between he and the manager. And honestly, the main reason I care about this is because the season could actually come down to Robbie Ray facing the Orioles.
Yeah, you know, it's a game of cat and mouse typically. It could be they had, you know, you could have someone signed. He could be tipping. It could be a bunch of different things. A lot of times, you know, you go back to the video room and you take a look and say, oh, that's what they were doing. And you fix it. Like, by this point in the season, everybody's watching everybody. No, I mean, almost every pitcher tips something. And the question is, you know, can you fix it? They probably did. I mean, I don't doubt. The pitcher usually knows. And I would imagine they did. But you can fix it.
So I know you spoke with Alec Manoah recently. And again, this is something I was talking to Dan Shulman about it earlier. With watching baseball, you watch your own team. There's really not a lot of room for watching anybody else. Now's the time of year where you start tuning in a little bit. I know Blue Jays fans are going to watch Yankees, Red Sox, right? Like, that's going to be on second screen over the next couple of days for people. But for the most part, it's kind of hard to have perspective about your own team. Like, everyone thinks their guy's the best, their guy's overlooked because that's what they watch 162 times, right? You go, you're watching you over and over and over again. You go, like, how could this not be appreciated in a certain way? But Alec Manoah is this one dude where I don't know if it's just because I'm such a fan of his basically everything, but how unique this is for a 23-year-old to come in and have the composure that he's had on the mound, where he's able to battle the way that he has through his starts, where he finds ways to win through his starts, and just what you make of him overall.
I think he's just an outstanding pitcher, outstanding dude, has a great mental approach to the game. He has like an old soul in that he is a throwback. He loves the competition, loves being put in a challenge. I thought his last outing was sensational for a game where he didn't have it. Like, I didn't think it was the sharpest, but he fought through it and gave his team a chance to win. And that is a veteran approach out of a rookie pitcher. And that's what you see with Manoah day in and day out. I love watching him pitch. He's filthy, but really it's that mental approach that separates him.
Yeah, again, it's what we look at from the outside too, where we see it and I see it and I just go, this is so special. And I think it's a little, there's a little added emphasis on it right now too, considering that the Jays' top two prospects were he and Nate Pearson. And one of the things that seems to be holding Nate back is just the ability to kind of deal with some struggles early on and get over those and not just have them define an outing. But yeah, with Manoah, it hasn't been a problem. And I guess the last guy I'll ask you about is Ryu. Do you have a Ryu theory as to what has happened this season and especially over, you know, the last couple of months with him?
You know, it's really tough. Like, it could be a tiny thing like command just being off. And when you're a command artist like Ryu is, that could very well be. He's still a leader on the team and has, you know, it shows flashes of his stuff. But if he's off by a little bit, he can get, you know, punished at times.
Rob Friedman, again, at Pitching Ninja. Thanks so much for making time today, man. Again, really, really love the work.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Take care, Rob. Guy who watches a lot of pitchers. I think every pitcher, which must be daunting. Every single night, flipping through all these games. I should have asked him what the screens process is on something like that. Either way, Manoah special. And it's a day later. And a bunch happened, and the benches cleared, and Pete Walker looked like the world's scariest human being. I can't wait to ask. I think I've actually talked to Leaper about this before, and Leap has said that Pete is a real sweetheart, which I'm sure is true. But, boy, Pete Walker in the hoodie, the sleeveless hoodie, screaming at umpires? Whew. I think it would have taken that whole crew. And I'm still taking Pete Walker. That whole crew versus Pete, Pete's like a minus 250 favorite to come out of that on top. To just be standing on top of corpses. Terrifying man. Terrifying man. Tim Leaper, former Jays coach. What he made of last night. Whether he thinks Pete Walker's a minus 250 favorite against the umpiring crew. And I'm not going to be able to stop talking about Manoah. That's next. Good show. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Our next guest is a liar. Lance, hit me with Today on Liars Who Lie.
Today on Liars Who Lie.
I brought up Pete Walker with my next guest before. And he's like, oh, he's sweet pie. He's a big sweetheart. He's a big sweet guy. He's apple pie. He's sunshines and rainbows. God, you just want to be around Pete Walker. And I told him I was scared of Pete Walker. There's just a thing to him. I said to Boffo during the break that it's like, if you showed up to pick up a girl and that guy was the dad at the door, you'd be like, would you like to hear about the good Lord? The good word is, I'm here to spread the good word. And then you just go to the next house and you never return. Leap, what's up, man?
I've never been introduced like that. That's solid. I did notice yesterday when he was upset at the umpire, man, his guns looked really big. So that was a little bit scary.
Yeah.
Working out.
I was terrified of Pete Walker. He's got the cutoff hoodie going. He's got the like ball cap pulled low. I was like, I said that he versus the entire umpire staff, he's a minus 250 favorite to come out on top of like four umpire corpses.
Joe West was there. That might have been a tough one for him. It might have been a tough one for him.
Joe West. He's going down. One shot. Country Joe is going down. This isn't 1962, Joe West. Like, it's 2021. You're going down to the dirt. Pete Walker is putting you in the grave immediately. So, yeah, no, he was fired up. And, you said it. He's a guy who sort of picks his spots with being angry, right? Like, when you saw that, Shulman was saying earlier that he thinks that Charlie wasn't in on Baraki's choice. And I got to wonder, after seeing the way that he went to bat for Baraki as well, that maybe he wasn't either.
That would be my take from it, not being in there. And I do know, obviously, there was two different things going on. And obviously, there was the things that were said, and there was obviously the reactions afterward. And I just kind of came away with the reaction. Like, if I had a coach, every team that I've ever been on, those kind of actions came from the manager, and we actually instructed guys not to ever do that unless it comes from the top. And now occasionally guys do act out on their own, but I don't think guys were mad at Borecki for what they did. I mean, I think if you're in the Blue Jay clubhouse, and we can get into the whole psyche of what's right, what's wrong here in a minute, but I think if you're a guy on the Blue Jays team yesterday and you just kind of had enough, and it seemed like that group, and them hitting them, there was no problem with the team hitting them, obviously. And again, from what you saw on the field, it probably didn't come it obviously didn't come from the top. So, like, my takeaway was this, and maybe this be a little bit harsh, but like if I'm a manager and I have a coach that's irate right there, I don't really want to go out there and like play nice to the umpires afterwards. So like I thought that was kind of a little bit odd. But Pete was definitely, I think, behind Borucki on that and protecting him because, you know, he wanted to keep his guy in the game. And I think a lot of stuff has happened over the course of the year. And I just think that he thought what he did was probably just.
Yeah. I thought it was just because they did, you know, like I've given my opinion on this, which is, people have kind of split it back and forth, and I'll let you answer, you know, how important that card is. But to me, I just thought what Kiermaier did, I'm fine with because they dropped it in front of him and he grabbed it. And I just know that anybody who's an elite athlete or a top-end competitor, I'm saying you're going to try to grab any edge you can. And so it fell there. He grabbed it. He brought it back. But when you do an action like that, you obviously have to be willing to deal with the consequences. And he wore one in his back because the Blue Jays were pissed. But it, from an actual strategical standpoint, from an actual like day-to-day operation, what was your thought on the value of that card?
The value of the cards, it could be big in some ways. One thing is the arrogance to think that you have information that, number one, the other team's not deciphering. At some point, you know, that this is to think we have information that's better than yours. Like I know that we chased the Rays for years in trying to find out what their analytics were. And if the Rays analytics department is what it is, you kind of have an idea what's on that card. I think some of the bigger stuff that could be on that card would be the sign sequencing stuff. You know, that's something you really can't hide. So each team's got their own different sign sequences. You're trying to hide size all the time. That's something that could be on the card. So that would be something that's very valuable in terms of like scientific information or metric information or how you're going to pitch a guy. All you got to do is go out and watch the way the guy pitched against the guy the last four times and know what he's going to do and in certain situations against certain hitters, because that's what every team does. And everybody's playing by the same set of rules. So the thing with the card for me, like this is the problem is when you take things on the field, like you have to take good care of these things. This is not banging on a trash can type cheating. This is you taking something on the field and not taking care of it. Obviously it didn't mean to come out of a wristband, but if it can't come out of a wristband, get a better wristband. If you take it out in the field and you drop it, like I don't understand. That's just the chance you take. I mean, I'm under the belief that we shouldn't be able to have anything to take on the field. I mean, the human element of the game is being taken out of it. And I think that's part of the competition as well. But if we choose to go that route and you just happen to leave something laying around, then it becomes fair game. Now, you can make a case, too, that when they ask for it back, that the Rays' response was really, really crappy, too. Like, you don't go out and make a joke about it. You know what that card means because you're a team that has the same thing. You know what it means to you. Like, if you're the Rays and you really want to do this the right way, you go snap a couple pictures on them on a cell phone, which will take 2 seconds, and you give them the card back, and then you got all the information. But then, you know, sending back a joke to the other dugout, that was a little bit of – I mean, that to me, that could have led to what happened yesterday more than the stealing of the card. Their reaction to it the first day immediately out of the gate was bad, really, really bad. And I think that could have had some carryover to it. And then, you know, coming out the next day and apologizing, especially apologizing to the people you needed to apologize, I just think that was, you know, it's great. We live in a world where I'm going to do the worst things possible in the world. But if I come out and apologize tomorrow, everything's great. I'll be like, here's your card back. We have 55 copies of it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I was raised Catholic, so that's the way it goes. And they're like, hey, just say you're sorry. You're good. Jesus forgives you. You're like, oh, sweet system we got here. So I'm in. Like that's yeah, I get the raised position. And, hey, man, I'm with you. Like, I almost all the way across the board with that thing. And I was going to ask you, you know, what it was then that the Blue Jays were so upset about. And, yeah, I do. Maybe that's what it was. Maybe it was the handling of it. All I know is that sports are, I don't want to say lovey-dovey, that makes me sound like way too old school, but it's just, the Blue Jays are a very well-liked team around baseball, and Vladdy's obviously very popular, and this team is very likable, and I don't want them to be the 2015 Blue Jays, where, like, everybody hates their guts, but there was something to me that, you know, they're getting into it with the Orioles, they sweep the Yankees, and now there's some real kind of bad blood there, and now you've got bad blood against the creme de la creme of the division in the Rays, that there is something about, like, this becoming something where it's almost a nod of respect. Do you buy into anything like that? That it's like you're mad or you get fired up or Kiermaier's talking about wanting to face them in the playoffs. I mean, he's already acknowledging that he thinks that they can get there.
Yeah, Kiermaier is not the most fearful guy in the world for me. So, like, that just comes kind of hollow. That really does, to be quite honest.
The Jays have Manoah. Like, it's just that, like, that's the ace in the hole in everything of this. It's just like, there's a guy out there that would have to grab Manoah, all right? So, good luck. Like, that's a thing. And Pete Walker.
Yeah, Pete Walker would be the one. He's going to crush people. But, you know, I think it just comes with competition. It's late in the year. I mean, coming off what it is. I mean, it's a division it truly is the best division in baseball, and it's the most competitive division in baseball. I mean, your three teams going for a wild card are all from the division. And then, you know, that's been the case even since we were back there in 2016. So I just think when you play 20 times a year, you play with the intensity of these games and the pressure of these games, this stuff just is going to – it's not going to just going to be fluid. I mean, if you have a fluid season with somebody, it means somebody probably wiped up on somebody else. And you can be nice. You can be great. You can be sportsmanlike. But, like, it's baseball, and something's going to pop up, you know, where teams are going to start to dislike each other. And I think, you know, to me, that's kind of the good part about the sport. I mean, you don't want the fights. You don't want the yelling and screaming. But the theater the last 2 weeks has been great, and the theater surrounding this thing has been tremendous.
Yeah, so they've got these last three series, which is incredible to think about. Like, this always happens with long baseball seasons where it feels like it's never going to end. It feels just so far away. Okay, you're in June, you're in July, there's so much season. All of a sudden, it's like, oh, this is it. These are the last bits, and you're a half game back of the wild card. Yankees and the Sox play each other. The Jays had this off game. They were missing Ryu. They threw a bullpen. Like, they had to do it. But did it feel a little bit like last night was a little bit of a foot off the pedal game for them, considering the way that they constructed the lineup? And, hey, maybe we lose this game. Maybe this is not our best foot forward because we have to have it the rest of the way.
I would hope that they didn't think that. I mean, this is not the time of year where you start doing those type of things. And I probably do think they could win the game, but even though – they realize they probably weren't at their best yesterday, but, like, it's, you know, this is the time of year where you got to win every night. And I think part of it too is, like, hey, it's Tampa, and, like, you know, it's tough to win in that building, even though they've done a much better job of it this year. It's tough to win. So, you know, it's not, obviously that wasn't a must win, must lose game. And, you know, I think we've been talking about the last 2 months. I mean, they were hot as could be, and then the offense went south a little bit, and then they got hot. We've been riding this emotional roller coaster. I think I would tend to look at yesterday's game as just kind of – I don't think there's ever a foot off the pedal, because I honestly feel like you can win with all your guys. They can win with all their guys around the team. But I do think that it was just a game, and then they just keep going and moving forward. And I think the big issues going forward are going to be the same things we talked about all year, man. It's going to come down – really, it's going to come down to bullpen and probably defense. And I think that's the bullpen depth in these last games is, you know, if you get into a bunch of tight games late, like, I don't know if that fits on their side or not.
Yeah, it's just tough to reconcile with them having a bullpen game where they were going to – and I know, like, Stripling has always been a little underappreciated here. Like, people look at him as though he is – just a back end, like, barely cracking a roster guy, despite him having a ton of success with the Dodgers and a lot of success here. So it's not like every outing where he's giving you bulk starting that he's getting lit up. Guy's been solid. But yeah, you have a bullpen game and you put Dyson in and you put McGuire in and you have Lamb, where it's like, listen, the bottom of your order, the last three bats are basically all automatic outs. It's kind of weird, right? Like, you're thinking this is a game where we're going to probably need a lot more offense. They end up with one run. I don't see a competitive reason why you'd have all those three guys in a game if it isn't a little bit of that mentality of, okay, we maybe don't need tonight, but we need the rest of them.
Yeah, and that could very well go into the thinking. It was just maybe they felt like the matchup, you know, throwing all the lefties in there was the deal. Yeah. And, you know, and again, like, that's just, again, I think that's one of those things too. Like, when you're a really good team going late and going for those things, maybe your bench may be a little bit tighter. You may have a little bit more down there at the bottom, but the pickups they've had have been great. It's been able to like balance out the lineup a little bit. But at the same time, those guys do need to start sometimes. So yeah, that's a good point. I think when you got too many of them in at the same time and they're actually just like kind of puzzle pieces, like to kind of like, plug holes at the end of the game, you know, maybe it's tough to carry an offense that day. So, but I think at the end of the day, I don't think yesterday's game was the deal, and how many, just a week and a half left. And I think it's going to be a great, great, great stretch for sure.
Yeah, I'm incredibly excited for it. And I know that because I feel sick about it, you know? like, I woke up this morning and I looked at these games against the Twins, and it's you think, okay, well, you got to have these ones. You got four games against Minnesota, three games against Baltimore, and those are supposed to be that's supposed to be seven wins right there, right? Like, it should be anyways, put you in a good spot. And as soon as they fall down a run or two against a team like the Twins, or even when they're only up one or two and you feel like they left some runs on the board, you just got to sit there all night and feel sick. there all night, you stare at it. You're like, why do I like this stuff? How is this an entertainment product? How is this, you know, the way that I spend my free time? Why, like, genuinely, like, poisoning myself by watching this and having complete gut rot?
And it's a Major League Baseball game, so you know anything can happen. Sometimes these September games, especially against teams that are not in your division, who you don't play and you're not really prepared for, I mean, you prepare for them, but you don't know them as well as you know your teams in your own division. And then you play them now, they got a bunch of guys after trades and rookies, and you really don't know them. Those random games are sometimes the scariest ones you have to play. And it's a Major League Baseball game. I mean, Minnesota has Major League Baseball players, and they, you know, they can win games. So, yeah, it looks on the schedule like this is easy, but boy, it never is. It absolutely never is.
No, it's not. So I wanted to talk to you, and I've been talking all day. This is 2 days in a row of Manoah takes, so everybody's pretty on board with where I am. And I just kind of keep asking the same question to people who've been around the game for a really long time and who have seen a lot of players and who have seen a lot of young pitchers. But for a 23-year-old to step into a club like this, and I know the Blue Jays are young, right? Like, he didn't step into a team that's just, like, completely veteran-laden where there's nobody that he can relate to. And the young guys have had success, right? Like, Vladdy and Bo, they're there, and he can look at them as peers and equals in a lot of ways. But for him to be 23 and have the composure that he has, for him to step in here, like, I've outlined it. In his last – the Jays have won six games in a row where he started, and five of those games have been against the White Sox, two against the Rays, one against the Yankees, and one against Oakland. Like, all teams that are battling for position, all the top-tier teams in baseball. Like, how often does this come along for, like, to you? Is this something that you even look at it and say, boy, this is, like, a real rarity, where he's at with his mental and physical approach? Or am I, like, looking at it with a little too much awe?
No, it's awesome. And one point on that, too, the other day, and I look at the numbers of the numbers, and they really speak for themselves. But the one thing the other day, like, then we'll go back to Joe West. Joe West is a really tough umpire, and he's an old-school umpire in terms of, like, if you're a rookie, you need to earn stuff. And, like, when he squeezed him on a strike three call and Manoah went back behind the mound, like, those are the things that Joe West looks for. We can judge what he's doing on its own, but if a kid reacts poorly there, like, he'll bury him. And then, because that's the way the game used to be played. That's the style of play when Joe came up. And the way he handled that situation to me was, like, absolutely maturity. And earned points probably with Joe. I think Joe knew it was a close pitch. I think he handled it right. I mean, those are the kind of things that the little added things with the emotion of that at bat did not get to him. And that just speaks greater to me about his whole game and how he's doing and probably why he's having the success he's having. And it's hard. And I think he looked at Vladdy and Bo and these guys as guys that are older, because he did come in a good time after them. You know, those are guys that are – look, so he really truly is the youngest guy on the team. You know, we were blessed to have two guys that came into the league and do really well with Sanchez and Stroman. And what they did was absolutely incredible. But to do what he's doing, he probably had a little bit younger. I know maybe he's not as Sanchez, but, like, a guy who's doing what he's doing in a pennant stretch and then showing the amount of poise and the growth he's showing, like, it's really good. It's really special. I mean, you just hope, again, you realize how hard it is for starting pitchers to stay good over a length of time. Health plays such a huge factor in all this stuff. But if you talk about a guy who broke into the league, is pitching big games, is learning, who is maturing, like, he checks all the boxes. And it actually really has been impressive to see.
Yeah. I'm not the first one to make this comparison, but he is, like, to me, he's big Stroman, right? Like, they came in, they're both college pitchers. They both have that attitude of, like, don't look at me. You know, like, I'm so mad. They're going to bark at guys already. Like, Stroman came in, he was 23. They were the same age. Stroman pitched in, I'm looking it up right now. He started 20 games for the Jays in his age 23 season, and he went 11-6 with a 3.65 ERA. He was awesome. And it's just, it's hilarious how different the body types are, because it's just like, they both throw like a pretty similar fastball and they both have the slider. And, you know, I watch and I'm like, how did the Blue Jays just replicate this guy, you know, a few years later? It's the exact same experience, except the only thing is like, maybe someone would have rushed the mound. Like maybe someone would have taken a shot at Stroman. I don't think anybody's ever going to take a shot at Manoah. Like I don't see that happening. I'm not running up on him.
There's some big humans in Major League Baseball, and there's guys that'll take shots when they shouldn't take shots. So hey, you never know. But he does handle himself with class. I mean, he's driven, and he's focused, and he's not taunting guys or doing like that. Everything he has is very legit, and that's how it was actually with Stroman when he came up. Everything was like internalized. The emotion was his emotion. You know, that may have changed a little bit, but you know, at the same time, this guy's really driven, and you can just tell he loves to compete. And the one thing about him, and you know. Whatever your take is, he loves the game. He loves playing baseball, and he loves competing, and that's a really, really cool and fresh thing to look at.
Yeah, you know, man, I'm glad you brought that up, because that probably is a big element of it for me, where I am so enamored by the kid, is that having passion for something is infectious, you know, when you're around people who really give a crap, and it gives you energy. And I'm watching, and it is reminded, like, I don't know if you're a football guy, but I'm watching these Manning casts, and I'm watching Peyton Manning watch football games, and it's Lions Packers, and it's the fourth quarter, it's a blowout, it's raining, it's sloppy, I don't care, and I'm still watching the game, because Peyton Manning is sitting there playing quarterback in his mind, and he is just, he's amped up about it. And his passion is seeping through the television and it's working on me. And I'm like, yeah, I'm into this too. And it's the same way I feel about Manoah. Is like, this guy loves baseball. Like, you watch him play, he loves being there. He loves that moment. He loves taking the ball. He loves being on the top step. Like, every part of it, he just seems like he's radiating like great energy and good vibes. And I can't imagine what the value of a kind of teammates like that are.
It's great, and he's like, we were blessed to have a ton of them there during my time there. And again, you get iron sharp as iron, and when you brought in guys with the intensity and the love like that, and it can come in different forms. This is kind of a joyful, playful thing until like it becomes competition time, and then he's an animal. Like we had guys that were, yeah, no, you just mentioned the 2015 team at Toronto versus everybody, and then again, we owned it, and that was kind of our mantra. But like you talk about, like, a bunch of guys in the clubhouse that were driven and loved the game, like we were a part of that, and that's only because not everybody's gonna be like that. But when you have more guys like that, you're absolutely right; it does rub off on everybody.
Yeah, and what do they describe the seasons as? Always across the board, the grind of the regular season, right? It's 162 games, and in hockey and basketball, it's 82. Like, there are ups and downs in a season, and having those guys, like, it must be massive. It must have been a massive shot in the arm for them both on the field and off. Leap, thanks for doing this, man. Always fun. Always a ton of energy from you. Always a ton of passion from you as well. So thanks for doing it.
All right. Great talking to you. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Have a good day.
Cheers, buddy. Tim Leaper, former Blue Jays first base coach. Also, I don't know if he's the world's bravest man. Like, he's like Crocodile Hunter style, like one of those dudes who's willing to hug lions for the gram. So he's like not afraid of Pete Walker. He's just on a regular basis. He's like, he's a cool guy. Seems pretty sweet. Or he's a liar. He's just trembling in his boots like the rest of us when you see Pete Walker fly out of the dugout. Start screaming and pointing at guys. And like the only buffer between you and his wrath is little Charlie Montoyo. Not good. Get more guys in here. That's what I would want. I'm going to talk to Anthony Stewart in a second. I got some more Leafs thoughts I want to bounce off him, and I just want to catch up with him. He's my buddy, and I miss him. There's this Andrew Wiggins story, and I'm probably going to do a little bit more on it, maybe. I don't know what I'm going to do here. But Wiggins was one of the first guys who publicly came out and was like, I'm not taking this vaccine. And this is pretty early on. And I've never really been all that sensitive towards the people who decide not to take it. I think it should be your choice, right? Should be nothing forced. I don't like government intervention. But I also think that it's my right to think that you're really stupid for not taking it and that you're reckless with other people's health. It's my right to say something about it. And I think what Andrew Wiggins' position has been pretty stupid all along, right? You're not a scientist, Andrew Wiggins. apparently he's still refusing to get it. And in California, you got to have it. And last we checked, he's still a member of the Golden State Warriors who reside in Oakland, or who don't anymore. They're close to Oakland. I can't remember where it is. Are they in Oakland? No, they're gone. They're somewhere else. So there's some real fear around the organization that he's not going to be able to play in their home games. He obviously won't be able to travel to Canada, but that's no big deal because that's only going to happen once a year for the Warriors. But no home games is quite a thing. My guess is he's going to come around on this when he starts getting docked paychecks because he makes a ton of money. And that this is one of those goes up to the wire things. But here's where you care. I wondered if way back when we cared about things like trades before the NBA draft, I wonder if this had any impact on the Raptors' ability to find a trade with the Golden State Warriors that involved Pascal Siakam and draft picks. Because they needed Wiggins' contract in there. And if you remember, there were some rumors being kicked around that the Warriors and Raptors had some mutual interest. And it made a lot of sense. It still makes sense to me to this day. Warriors had two first-round picks and Wiseman. The Raptors had a top-four pick and were clearly pivoting. Siakam was a max contract guy who fits in seamlessly with the Warriors as a guy who can be a top option, who is a stud defensive player, and who helps the urgency with a group that has players in their 30s. Steph Curry, I think Steph will age gracefully. I don't think it's going to be as shocking as some people think that it's going to be. But Clay, you know, Clay's had two major knee surgeries, and the idea of us like counting on him being healthy and staying ready and or two lower body injuries, I should say, but that's no guarantee. I think there's more urgency with Clay than there is with Steph. Either way, you've got it with both those guys. And Draymond is already, I think, a little bit on the decline. We've already seen it with his offense, but it's hard to envision him becoming a better defensive player as he ages. I think he's still smart. He's got the intellect. He's got the passion. He'll be fine, but he's not going to be Draymond forever. The idea that you could go get Pascal Siakam was one where I said, that makes all the sense in the world. And even though those draft picks are always very highly coveted, and even though you do have to hedge your bets for years down the line, the Warriors are much better with Pascal Siakam than who'd they get? Kuminga? I can't remember who the other pick was. I think Moses Moody. And it would have been good for the Raptors because they sort of have to pivot. And I know Siakam just made a charitable donation and he's on the kind of like Toronto rehab image tour and still a good player here. I'm not saying that they had to do this trade. I'm just saying that that was the kind of overpay that you would get. Three potential lottery picks for Siakam and bringing in Wiggins, who maybe you could flip a year from now and who is the Canadian kid and maybe works out well for the franchise, plays the wing. I just wonder if there was a hang up with the vaccine, if that was at least a bit of a part of it. I wonder if the Warriors had any value on him because his trade value was at least up a little bit because he was valuable to them last season. And whether the Raptors, God, I've talked so much of a loser, whether the Raptors looked at it and were like, hey, this guy, he's not getting vaccinated. And they were like, maybe he will though. And they were like, we're not doing this trade then. So just food for thought. When we come back, Stewie, and ask him if I'm making too big a deal about the way that the Leafs comported themselves yesterday and what the line should be. Because old Sheldon Keefe says, nothing's set in stone, according to him. Anthony Stewart, Hockey Night in Canada, NHL on Sportsnet, former NHL player, all-around great guy. Dude whose jacket I tried to steal. That's next. Good show. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I always loved the people when you were a kid and you had the Halloween costume and to rock the big UNICEF box that you'd carry around your neck, and the houses that would already have the UNICEF box money ready to rock and roll. But yeah, the pandemic ends for no one until it ends for everyone. UNICEF is leading the procurement and delivery of 2 billion COVID-19 vaccines to countries around the world. It's an effort of this scale. It's never been done before. So by donating to UNICEF Canada by September 30th, Canadians have the opportunity to make a difference and support the vaccination of millions in lower-income countries. Every dollar donated by September 30th will be matched by the Canadian government, which is great. So donate today at unicef.ca or text VACCINES to 45678 to donate 10 bucks. Got it? Donate today, unicef.ca or text VACCINES to 45678 to donate 10 bucks. Anthony Stewart, Hockey Night in Canada, NHL on Sportsnet. He's everywhere. He's everybody. What's up, buddy? Long time.
I'm doing well, and I want to know where your counterpart is. Is he on vacation still here? What's going on here? No one's working these days.
He's been doing writer's block, man. Like, he's a writer now. He's writing all the columns that he's has. He's Mr. Fancy Pants. Like,
yeah, well, if they had tweeter's block, I think I'd be the highest up in the company right now, too.
Yeah,
so
that's
need to
right.
find something about my tweets going
exactly.
on.
Exactly. You know, it's nice that you've been assaulting Riccio lately and not me as much, which is good, you know?
Take that, Riccio. It's Toronto versus everybody. Vancouver can catch it. Calgary. Is there anyone in Ottawa that needs a little talking to? I'll give them a little talking
man, I let people in because they say don't do inside jokes on radio. Dan Riccio, who used to work here, my boy, everybody's the guy. Like, truly one of the best guys in the business. Like, no doubt about it. He had a bet on his show that if he lost, he had to reveal this picture of him and Zdeno Chara that was apparently embarrassing. And I'd heard about this photo before. Dan's not the biggest dude, right? Like, but the difference is, like, Dan has, since Dan moved to Vancouver, he became Vancouver Dan, right? Where all of a sudden you're doing the grouse grind. All of a sudden you care about, you know, having your morning special coffee. You only drink green stuff. You know, you're grinding for the body because you just have to be in phenomenal shape to live in that city. And old Danny released a picture of him next to Zdeno Chara. I think, so Big Z's what, 6'9"?
6'9", yeah.
6'9"? I want to say Riccio's, I'm sorry, Reach. I don't mean to expose you this way, but like maybe 5'6"? 5'7"? I'll give you 5'7", Reach. I won't go.
They might not let him. They might not let him on Ghoster Coaster at Canada.
No.
They might say, hey, buddy, you gotta
but he's got
to see the bumper cars are over there.
Yeah, he's got the like bad early 2000s chin strap going. Like, it's just not a good look.
Great guy. Great personality.
Yeah, best guy. Best guy. But the fact that he released it is like what shows you what a champion he is. Anyways, go to Riccio's Twitter account. Shoot him a follow, at Dan Riccio. He might have 650 in there or whatever. Those guys do that a lot. Either way, what a champion. What a champion. But he took the comments on Riccio's Twitter were like incredible. There was some red hot fire in that. And I even told him, I was like, poor Dan, I have pictures of him. Like, I have a picture of him standing with a couple of Atlanta Falcons players when they came to Canada. It's just as bad. It's just as bad. I was like, I'm going to keep that one in the pocket. I'm going to leave that one on my phone.
I didn't even know what was going on with the meme, but I just sent a couple shots and I got out of the thread quickly here. So
you absolutely had to
for the culture.
So yeah, man, let's just start with this. Like, this is tough for the Leafs. Like, they're coming in here and there's just nothing they can do to win people over out of the gate, right? I think Matthews' popularity is always going to be Matthews' popularity, right? He's going to come in, he's probably going to score 50 goals, and everybody's going to love him. Everybody else, it's like, if your name isn't Jason Spezza, you're on. I think Jake Muzzin too is pretty immune from criticism, but again, it's Toronto, so people can turn on you in a heartbeat. But yeah, just, you know, what do you think these guys are going through coming into this season where you kind of know that your fans aren't all the way with you? I'm not saying fans should be. Like, I'm definitely not fan shaming, telling people how to feel. I just wonder from the player standpoint, what do you think these guys are doing, how they're dealing with that?
Well, I'm the wrong guy to ask because there's usually zero expectations for the teams that I went to starting the camp. So we literally
you were like, they know
guys.
Who I am?
you know, asking you about how your summer went and, you know, did you come in the best shape of your life? Yes. And then they write that and that was the end of it too. But a lot of these guys, they know what they're signing up for when they re-upped in Toronto, knowing that you're going to be under the microscope. They're going to be asking about Mikheyev's goals. They're going to be asking about Marner throwing out his videos. They're going to be asking about Nylander, why are you wearing a mask? So I think the players understand that. But I think with some of the media, what they want a little bit more honesty. But it goes both ways. If they're honest now, you're going to be now writing all these articles saying, you know, look at their bad attitudes or this, that, and the other. So I heard you talking about Marner, you know, earlier. I don't think he's a guy that really pays attention to social media or pays attention to what guys are saying. And you can't really blame him for being very vanilla in his interviews. That's just how he is. Do we expect him to be on Hockey Night in Canada after he's done playing? Probably not. But he doesn't need to be that guy where he's a media darling, because at the end of the day, he shows up, he does his job, he understands there's a scrutiny that comes with it, but I don't think it really, really affects his day-to-day life, to be honest with you.
No, but he doesn't show up. He doesn't do his job. He does it in the regular season. He hasn't done it in the playoffs.
We're talking
that's the whole
playoffs,
story.
But playoffs is tough. Playoffs is tough. Yeah. It's a different
playoffs is tough. It's tough for everybody.
And I'm telling
you, it's tough for everybody.
26, 27, 28, and people keep forgetting about the Stevie Wise and the Ovechkins. They've gone through it too. These guys are superstars. Anyway, you dice it, Mitch Marner is a superstar. But again, he is not immune from the scrutiny, and he has to perform too. He understands that too. But let's not pretend that, you know, if he was on another team, you would absolutely be saying, you know what, we'll give up most of our assets to get a player like Mitch Marner too. So I understand both sides of the equation here. But again, everyone hates hearing it. These guys are young. It takes time to learn how to win, how to lose in the National Hockey League. And you can't just show up and be a performer. You know, everyone's comparing, you know, the MacKinnons and the Crosbys. And these guys are different beasts. You know, these guys are probably sleeping in right now after their pregame skate, getting ready for their workout tonight. These guys are a different breed, some of these top guys in the National Hockey League. You have to learn that. You have to adapt.
Hey, Stewie, Alex Ovechkin, when he was 22, 7 playoff games, 9 points, 4 goals, 5 assists. 2008-2009, his age 23 season, 14 games, 11 goals, 10 assists, 21 points in 14 games. Like, this is a totally different thing. This isn't like, oh, man, he's just like snake bit. It's the team thing. Like, no, man, come on. Marner was brutal. He led the league in over the glass and led the league in nothing else come the postseason. Like, there was a completely different level of falling apart. And this was not like his first rodeo. And this also is modern NHL, where when you're 24 years old, you're like, what? If we're going back to even when you played, it's like, you're 27, 28 years old, basically. He's into his prime now, man. And it's like, yeah, you got to learn to lose. But guess what these guys have done a lot of now? Losing in the playoffs. Like, that's what it is. That's cool when you lost year one to Washington. That's cool when you lost year two to Boston. Even the second time around to Boston, where you're like, okay, this is sort of the last little hiccup here. To have it happen against Columbus, to have it happen now, this time around, it's a deal, bro. Like, it's a real thing. And so, I don't know, man. I think that the scrutiny thing completely weighs on this guy's shoulders, because there's got to be a reason why he looks like that elite player, that Team Canada lock when it's the regular season, and how he's disappeared basically for like 20 plus playoff games in a row when he actually is in his prime and when he is putting up numbers that put him amongst the game's best.
Yeah, well, I will say the one thing that do bother him, when you got fans throwing stuff at his house, and that's been confirmed on the inside, hashtag insider there too. So that weighs in on you too. But again, it's the league is hard, and people don't like hearing that. The league is hard, but you have to learn. You have to learn. And in this market, that media scrutiny, that is part of it. And I know it comes with the big, big contracts, but these guys, some of them are still kids, and it's tough to really explain that too. But these guys, you're comparing them to the MacKinnons and the McDavid. These guys I keep mentioning are different.
He did that when he asked for the money. He was like, I want $11 million because I compare myself to the MacKinnons and the McDavid.
There is 30 other teams or 31 thoughts that of teams that would be lining up for his services, because he is that player. But again, he has to perform. He has to step up in the playoffs. But again, I say give it time. But this goes back to now the whole team now. If it's not working, you have to blow it up. So I'm not giving these Leafs a pass in any sense of the word. We were talking 2 years ago, I think, on this show. This is the year. We're all in. These guys are going to do it. And it's like, you know, you guys are giving the team a pass, where I don't even want to be talking about the micromanagement of the team. We got to assess this team in playoffs, because this is what the goal is. We've been saying this for 2 years. If they don't get past the second or third round, we're going to be blowing it up. And that has not been the case. So I'm looking for this team to really step up and really start dominating, but they're not really going to assess anything exactly where they're at the playoffs. And I just don't like the narrative saying, well, we're talking they might not make the playoffs. So how does it go for we're supposed to be taking the next step and we're going to be now being playoff contenders now and the team on paper hasn't gotten any better? You know, I love Nick Ritchie, but is that the permanent replacement for, you know, for Zach Hyman? You know, Michael Bunting, he scored 11 goals in 20, you know, six NHL games. Is he a really suitable third line guy on the left wing here? Why haven't we talked about Nick Robertson? Why have we not talked about, you know, 10, 12 prospects in the National Hockey League that had less pedigree in the last year and a half that have come back and passed him in development and now are regular contributors in the National Hockey League? His own brother. His own brother last year, they stuck him on the top six role, left him there, and what did you get? You got a Calder nominee. So I think that should be the questions, the development of these young, young players and where they are in this lineup. And the future's not really bright because who do you really have in the system? And you're just sort of having this, you know, revolving carousel of players that are coming in as Band-Aid solutions. And this leads me back to my original point that we've had on this year on the show. Where's Kapanen and where's Johnsson? That's what this team is missing. So you're not going to like to hear that on Twitter too, but those are the types of guys you need. The mid-level, $2.5 to $3.2 million players that you can plug in. No one would be complaining right now if you had Johnsson in your top six. No one would be complaining right now if you had Kapanen in the top six, because those are guys I think were proven that can step in and shown when they got the opportunity, they can be 15, 20 goal guys. And that's what this team is missing. They're missing those sure things. There's too many question marks. There's too many guys. Well, what if? What if this guy gets hurt? What if this guy is not in the top six? There's too many question marks for a team that is supposed to be stepping up and taking the next step in their development.
You brought up one of my favorite things that I have been burying. No, I've been sitting on the Robertson thing, right? Like, I got to ration out my takes here, buddy. Like, I got media day. I'm doing that.
That is top five storyline with this team. I honestly believe it. And no one talks about it.
I know. Okay. Well, all right. You're making me spoil a little thing. Well, you're right. How the hell have people not brought up that his brother scored 17 goals in 51 games last year? And his brother's 22. What's Nick? He's 21? They're a year apart? Or they're 2 years apart? Maybe they're 2 years apart. Either way, it's like, boy. One thing I hate is that, like, his brother is way taller than he is, which is, you know, unfair. It's like Jason, I think, is, like, over 6 feet and, you know, Nick is not. But either way, like, 17 and 51 last season. And 45 points. He's almost a point-a-game player in his first, like, real season with Dallas. Before that, he got, like, a look for, I think, just, like, one or two games. I have it written in a doc. Maybe it's three. It's not more than five. Like, this was his first year. He came in. He stepped up. He was a stud. The thing with the Montreal series was, like, Cole Caulfield came in and was dangerous. And they have guys who were on rookie deals that contributed and gave you way, way, way above average or wins above replacement based on the dollar, right? That's how you win in the cap era. You need the young guys to come up and you need them to dominate. And you're right. They don't really have anybody else. And there's all these things about, oh, Robertson, you know, he's dominating rookie camp or the young guy camp and doing all this. It's like, he better, because there's nobody else there. Like, name the second best guy that's at that camp in the forward group. Like, go ahead, Leafs fans that know everybody. It's like, who's the guy that you think is coming up? No, dude, Nick Robertson sneakily gotta say 19, 20. I'm always confused by his age. I gotta bring it up. I think he's 20 now. He's 20. Okay, he's 20. He just turned 20, like, a couple weeks ago. This 20-year-old kid matters a ton. Like, we keep doing this stuff about, like, is Richie going to be top six? I think maybe, probably, you know, he probably fits in there. Is Michael Bunting going to fit in the top six? Maybe for a little while. Oh, is Mikheyev going to get a look there? Maybe, probably. I feel like what they're going to do with Robertson is ask him not to step in camp early and let him, like, get some seasoning down there, and then he just becomes this, like, massive pivot point in the season when they need to add a top six guy. But you're right, like, I think the most important guys are obviously Marner, they're obviously Matthews, they're obviously Nylander, they're obviously Tavares. But if we're talking about, like, forwards that matter the most for this season's success, I sneaky think that, like, Nick Robertson matters 10 billion times more than Michael Bunting.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. I talk about those Band-Aid solutions. And, you know, there needs to be a clear development plan on exactly what's going on. And you're talking about Nick Robertson at rookie development camp. Well, last year, why wasn't he at World Juniors? Why didn't he play World Juniors? And just the confidence that he could have gotten dominating on that stage, right?
For World Juniors. Wasn't he hurt?
I don't think so. I think he got hurt when he got back and for the first couple after the first game of the season. But Why aren't they having conversations with now, even with the media? Hey, you know what? We're going to put him in the top six to see what he can do, or have a conversation and say, hey, we're going to give you 15, 20 games. Let's see what you can do. And I guarantee you, if that was the case, 20 games, you'd have 6, 7, 8 goals, not worrying if he's shuttling between making, you know, his AHL salary, his NHL. Let him go in there. Let him prove that what he can do, because we all know he can put the puck in the net. But I think this comes down to, you know, the top four now. Where's their input? They should be asking, well, who do you want to be on your wing? Who should we go out and get? So it just seems like they're just getting, you know, temporary solutions. And this team on paper is not better than it was last year. So I know Simmons is probably going to text me, why are you chirping the Leafs? But again, that's the reality of the situation, because we've been talking about this for 2 years, Stanley Cup contenders. But you look at all the contenders in the league, they find a way to make it work. They have a number one, bona fide number one goaltender. They have a number one stud on the back end. Their power play is clicking. They have their stars that are outperforming their contracts. You know, they know how to do cap gymnastics and maneuver throughout the salary cap. And this Leap team, they're not really getting that right now. So the jury's still out. And like you said, I don't think you're really going to be able to assess exactly where they're at to playoffs. And I'm not 100% sure now with the divisions realigning if they're going to be a playoff team. So I'd love to see it. Again, I don't really hide. I'm not really a Leaf fan, but I understand the importance of this market and the fans having a quality team. So I hope for their sake that, you know, they deliver this year.
Not really a Leaf fan. You love them. You're from here. You got a butt on the team. Not really a Leaf fan. Oh, give me a break. So, you know, speaking of Simmons, one of the things about last year, too, that I wanted to touch on with you today was there were a couple things. Remember, there was all these different mandates, right? We're going to be tougher to play against, tougher to play against, tougher to play against, tougher to play against. And part of that was having some edge. Thinking of things people have not talked a lot about, because most of it has been centered around, you know, the guys up top. It has been, they lost Bogosian, steady, and also tough as nails. They lost Hyman, steady, tough as nails. Foligno, added him, didn't turn out the way they wanted it to, but here's what you can never take away from the guy, tough as nails. Played with just a back injury that was debilitating for him. He came on and talked to me about it. It was brutal for him. He was like, guy was in mega pain and still went out there and scrapped Corey Perry. Thornton, old, can't skate, thrilled he's not here anymore from a hockey standpoint, but still think of him as a tough guy, man. Still think of him as a nasty dude. They lost some edge and they added Richie, and that's one guy, but actually, this sort of feels like the one thing around this team is like they're actually going back to the model of old, which is like this doesn't seem to be as big of a priority as having that quote-unquote edge.
No, they're going back to the strength. The power play is their toughness, right? So let's hopefully it's clicking. But, you know, that's the problem. Your identity is who you are, but it seems like this team is still trying to find out exactly who they are. And then bringing in, you know, how many new forwards to the forward group, 4 or 5 guys, it's going to take some time to establish them. And in this new division, you know, you have a 12-game, 15-game nap, you can fall right out of it because it's going to be an ultimate competitive division. There's going to be some teams now. It's going to be tough to make the playoffs just no matter how good of a team you are. So I think this team, they have to find a way to establish their identity early. But as Berkey used to say, you have to get good quick or get bad quick too. So I'd love to see, hey, if you know what, if it's not the year this year, let's get Sandin some top 4 minutes. Let's get, you know, Liljegren up there. Let's put Nick Robertson in a top 6 role and let him get his 15, 20 goals and set himself up for the future and start getting some younger guys in, because just this whole Band-Aid solution carousel rotating, you know, guys that you don't really know what's going on. It's not really working. It's not really working. It's almost as if they're throwing something against the wall. Let's hope. Let's hope Nick Ritchie puts up 20. Let's hope Michael Bunting from Scarborough, Ontario can come in and have a great year. You know, let's hope that some of these guys step up too. And again, I'd like to take this opportunity to talk about Josh Hosang, who I think has a great opportunity to make this team too. I've seen him on the ice. I've been on the ice with him for the last little bit. I think with a new opportunity, he can be this team's Galchenyuk. So, but that's not really a permanent solution right now with this team. They need these guys. They're putting too much pressure on this big four here. And you look what's happening with Pittsburgh right now. They got Crosby out. They got Malkin out. You lose one or two of these guys, sorry. It's bye-bye season before the season even starts.
Yeah, the last thing the Leafs need is another Galchenyuk, though. Maybe use a different thing. Like, I don't need another guy who turns the puck over in the biggest
Sergei
game
Berezin?
Of the season.
Who do they need?
Yes. Hey, buddy, we got to run. We got to get out of here. We're already late for break. But, yeah, man, I miss you. And let's do a beer soon, man. I'll get at you in the text, but we got to figure something out. I know you're world's busiest man, but, yeah, it's great chatting with you, pal. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, we'll have a root beer.
Yeah,
thanks
absolutely.
A lot. Go Leafs, go.
Okay, yeah, I forget. Mr., you know, it's the pillar. He's the pillar, Stewie. Never had a drink, never done a bad thing. Great guy. I'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Good show. JD Bunkus, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.